which is...
But it's okay. But it's okay, it's not a problem. You can see.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are just waiting for the technician to finish up. But maybe while they're still working, we even have the presentations with us. I'm not sure then, Mr. Mahado, whether you are connected. So we are still not. It's still not operated. Yeah, I was going to propose that we start with our meeting with all the necessary processes that we usually follow, they will be busy with connecting as soon as they are done, then we'll be able to use the screens. But I am informed that I must request you, honorable members, why the screens are not yet on, when to use the colored presentation. I'm just checking if we all have that. Yeah. Do we have the colored one? All of us. Honorable Fanny Grant, why are you looking at me like that?
I can't even like it.
Come again?
I'll speak to you later.
Okay. Yeah. But let us put that then with the meeting. Hopefully, when we get into the presentation itself, everything will be okay. Let me greet you then formally, honorable members, colleagues from the department, DM. This is one of the most important meetings, again, that we have at the Portfolio Committee, where we are looking at the annual report that is 2015-2016. What is even interesting, DM, is that now and again, we do meet the department, we do sit with the department on quarterly reports, but today we are going to be having that view for the whole year as to say what is it that the department has been doing. And just to recap, Deputy Minister, our engagement with the department last year, that is 2014-15, there are things that were highlighted, more especially taking them from the AG's report, and we recommended as the portfolio committee to the department to look at those areas. Like some of the things, one of the things that was highly raised last year was the issue of the accruals and the payables that are done, to be done within 30 days. And those are the things that we have been getting the progress report even from the department, as to say some of those things we are taking care of, but we want to hear today what is it that you have been doing so far. One other thing that was highly highlighted last year again was the whole issue of the internal processes when it comes to the internal controls within the department. And yes, we have been getting the updates, but we want to hear even now, looking at this annual report, how far has the department gone and what is it that we are moving towards correcting that, the non-compliance, the, you know. Though those findings and the recommendations were not much, but we managed to talk to what the AG has highlighted, and we had agreements with the department, and they did progress, of which we'll be waiting to hear from the department as to say what is it that we have done. And also, understanding very well at the end that this is the annual report for DBE. That is what we are here for today. Yes, I always say there is a very thin line from us honorable members not to question things that are even happening in the provinces, but I know we always get corrected as to say that is the competence of the provinces. I mean to say, even honorable members, from the report, as we have gone through the report, some of the questions, DM, it should be very difficult to control as to say we cannot tap to the things that the provinces are doing, but as we are saying, this is one department. Yes, we are going to be getting responses, but we know exactly, as honorable members, bearing in mind that this is the annual report for EDBE, not for the provinces, but we always say you are working with the provinces. We cannot fail and we cannot stop each other from making sure that we even tap on some of the things that the provinces are doing. I know it's a long presentation, DM. It's a long document of which we have taken time as the committee to go through, but we'll be waiting for your presentation then with your dedication together with the DG to lead us with your presentation today. Then after, we'll be taking the discussions with the honorable members. Today, we do have, I'm not sure whether, should I say, ample time, honorable members. But we do have a day for us to be with the department so that we can look at the annual report and make recommendations so that we move forward together and make sure that wherever there are weaknesses and loopholes, wherever there are good things, we talk to the department, commend where we need to, and also advise and give constructive criticism wherever we need to. But as I'm saying, we're not going to be very much pressurized with time. We do have time. And usually, honorable members, we usually see the AG's office before the department. But this time around, we have seen the department before the AG's office. The AG's office will be tomorrow. In one way or the other, it might be bad, it might be good, but let us hear the department today, because there were hiccups here and there for the AGs to be with us today. But it's fine, let us hear the department, some of the things that they'll be raising, we'll be noting down everything, and some of those things will still be raising them with the AGs office come the meeting tomorrow, because tomorrow we'll be meeting both the entities and the AGs office, still discussing the same thing on the annual report that the department would have presented to us today. Mr. Brown, I'm not sure whether there are any apologies before we even start with the honorable.
Thank you, Chair. I've received one apology for Honorable Ms. Lowe, but as I know, you will be joining us in the role, but we have received an apology for this.
Honorable members, for the full quota of our committee, we are waiting for Honorable Simang to join us. DM, can I then hand over to you to lead us on? Oh, I'm so sorry, Honorable members. We only start with introductions, but really, when I look around the house, I really don't see any need for introductions today, unless you advise me otherwise. There is absolutely no new face today.
Of it all, two weeks older since we saw each other last time.
No, it's like, let us skip that part of introductions. If ever really we feel that we need to know a person before anyone speaks, then you can say his or her name. But looking at the face around the room, we all familiar faces, we know each other now, we've been together for quite some time. Can I then hand over to you, DM, to lead us then with the discussions?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable and esteemed members. It's a great pleasure and privilege to be here with you again. I always commend, and I've done so quite publicly and privately, this committee for its extreme hard work, and I refer to all members of the committee. I think they contribute very significantly to the system of education. I would want to reflect on the importance of what you said in your opening remarks, and that is, notwithstanding the fact that education, basic education, is a concurrent competency where more than 90% of the resources are allocated to the provinces, and in fact just about 5% stays with the national departments as implementers of policy and overseeing the particular the systemic challenges within education, we cannot take the view that what happens in the province or what happens in the district or what happens in the school is really the responsibility only of a provincial department or a district official. We've taken the view that we look at education as a systemic challenge that we face in this particular country, and for that reason, in the past 2 terms, the Department of Basic Education, starting with the ministry itself, minister and deputy minister, as well as DG and senior management, have been meeting quarterly with district directors across the country. So our view is basically a child in KwaZulu-Natal, in Gauteng, the Western Cape is a child in the system of education that we and his or her interest is what we've got to protect and promote. So our commitment as a ministry and as a department, notwithstanding the challenges that we have with regard to resources, is that we would want to work collaboratively and cooperatively with the various provinces and the districts. What we can commend the provinces for, and all provinces, is that they work extremely well together, amongst themselves and with the Department of Basic Education, and it has made our task very much easier. So what we do have, arising from this community of practice, best practice, as district directors, interact with each other, and provincial head of department with the director general, and MECs for education with the ministry. It's a much more cohesive system of education. That does not detract from the reality that we have challenges. Chairperson, the director general is going to deal with the various issues in far greater detail. I thought as opening remarks, one has to basically reflect just very briefly on what confronts the country as a whole, what confronts us as a system. We cannot ignore the reality that education is human rights. It's quite relevant and basically raises the issues of fees in education, and the fees must fall phenomenon is a reality. And I heard some commentators speak about what about schools. Firstly, we would want to commend the leadership of our governing body associations, our principal associations, and more importantly, our leadership of students, who hold the view that they recognize that while there are challenges, the department has done very well. And department in a broader sense. It's not only the Department of Basic Education, but the provincial departments. And a few examples would probably assist us in understanding why we believe that there is a relative stability within the system. Our commitment to incremental provision of quality education and improved access can be seen on the basis of the statistics that will be provided by the Director General and his team. But just to mention a few, we've already reached the 9.7 mark in terms of feeding every child every day, every school day. So in other words, our nutrition scheme provides feeding nutritious meals to 9.7 million children every single school day. It's not an accident, it's something that occurs every single day, and it takes a huge effort to coordinate, to manage, and to deliver that. And then I think the details of that particular process will be elaborated by the Director General. The second reality is that 8 out of 10 children, could almost say roughly 82% of our learner population, go to no-fee schools. That means 82% of the children don't have to pay for the stationery, don't have to pay any school fees, don't have to pay for the textbooks. That's a provision, so that's access and affordability. But beyond that, those 80% that goes to fee-paying schools, your quintile 4 and 5 schools, the law provides an exemption. So where the parents are indigent, where they cannot afford, they are legally exempted from paying. So free education becomes a reality in our school. The third reality, for example, and it's important that we raise this, and certainly would be form part, I imagine, of the report of the Director General, is that our commitment to enhance literacy and numeracy, which we all agree, all political parties agree, because it's fundamental to the provision of quality education, has seen the light of day, not for 1 year, but for the past 6 to 7 years. Today, we distribute workbooks from grade R to grade 9. More than 55 million workbooks are distributed to every child, black and white, in the system. Now, that's quite remarkable, and that's delivered free of charge, whether you are in a quintile 1 school or in a quintile 5 school. The view that we take is basically a child, the best interest of the child is the child who receives the resource, which we believe is a quality resource to enhance his or her ability in terms of that. So quite interestingly, you find provinces firstly acknowledging and recognizing its value. Secondly, as in Gauteng and the Western Cape, they actually monitor the use of it, and the evidence is there by people, social scientists and educationists, that indeed workbooks have contributed significantly to the improvement of the quality of education, particularly in the early years. Now, the National Development Plan, it says, among other things, that we have to look at early childhood development. In fact, their recommendation is that you've got to look at 2 years of preschool. The household survey last year has indicated that in South Africa, 92% of the population has had at least 1 year of preschool education, and that's quite significant. But what is it that they receive? We basically have to recognize that when you look at a grade R school class, it's very different from an ordinary class because it's really learning by playing. So the resources for that particular class has to be different. The sanitation has to be different because of the little children. Practitioners have to be adequately trained. And today we have some 875,000 children in our grade R. It is our view, Chairperson, that certainly by next year we could say we are almost universal in terms of access or very near universal. And that's significant because it provides for access. But what resource does a child in grade R receive? And I ask these questions and I ask them to experts and to people in the media and stakeholders who raise their voices. And nobody seems to know, but if I tell them that every child in grade R receives 4 books delivered to him or her, white or black, Indian or colored, in a quintile 5 or quintile school, free of charge, delivered by the Department of Basic Education. They say, wow, are you serious? And they say, yes, we are serious. So I'm saying that these are amongst the things that we, it's not a celebration, it doesn't take away, detract from the reality that we have challenges. But it does say that there is a commitment to provide access, to provide resources, and to improve and enhance quality education. The NDP, the National Development Plan, also emphasizes the importance of professional development. And the question there is, you know, we said we're not going to wait for the debate about whether you should reopen your colleges. What is it that we have to provide to educators where they have accessible opportunities for their development? So among other things, you would find that we've established 144 teacher resource centers countrywide. All the managers of those resources are trained. 90 of them have highly sophisticated connectivity, and it is our view that by the end of this financial year, we would have all of them connected, because UNISA itself is embarked on a program of connecting another 43, if I'm not mistaken. So that becomes a wonderful resource. And any educator that visits that center can basically draw on any resource within the Department of Basic Education through the ICT facilities that is there. You will discover as you hear the report from, listen to the Director General, that one of the indicators that we have there where we've shown, and I thought it's important that we be honest about, we show there's a red flag, and that is in ensuring that we train 200,000 educators. The reality is we've developed 94 instruments for self-assessment for educators, where educators could, in a non-intrusive way, be able to say, okay, I am teaching mathematics. Let's test my skills in terms of the content knowledge. And through that, they would be able to find out precisely what the deficits are, and that instrument would enable them to basically correct or remediate in a way where it's not writing an examination, but it contributes directly to the self-development. A pilot has occurred, in fact, what the numbers that you see is the pilot, but what we've done beyond that is we've taken that, those systems, put them into each one of the teacher resource centers. And what we have to do now is to monitor the use, in other words, the incidence of the use of those particular instruments to be able to see what kind of impact is it making in terms of the professional development of educators. I thought it's important for me to raise that. The third element is a really to recognize, and that is quite fundamental, it's a generic outcome that we seek to achieve, is that we are in a non-racial, non-sexist, democratic society that is committed to inclusive development of our learners. Inclusive development includes, among other things, the promotion of multilingualism in our schools, the tolerance and respect for different religious groups itself. And it's quite pleasing because here's evidence of our democracy. We have a colleague seated right at the back. He's wearing a beard and he's wearing a topi, a skull cap. Nobody's looking and saying, what is this man doing out here? Why is he tied in a particular way? We have a lady with a scarf out there. We're not even shocked or even not uncomfortable about it because we've evolved as a society that is tolerant and respectful of it. That's what is important, is that particular tolerance and respect must occur in all our learning environments. So you can't have a situation as we've had where a child, because of a note stamp that she's wearing, is prohibited or is being sanctioned or disciplined to say that you're not conforming with the dress code of the school. And you know, we warned the MEC at the time, we warned our colleagues, listen, if you're going to go to the Constitutional Court with this matter, the Constitutional Court is going to take the view that you've got to create an inclusive society, and cultural and religious expressions form part of that particular reality. So So what happened in Pretoria Girls High, what happened in St. Susie out here, are basically red flags to say to us, let's be more attentive to the creation of codes of conduct that would embrace the democratic values and ethos that we have out here. And we can't run away from those realities. We have to confront those realities. Lastly, Chairperson, because I don't want to take away the content and analysis of what we would hear from the DG, is the issues of infrastructure. I think we must be honest that with the ACD program, we certainly had difficulties in its initial stages. It was a huge challenge. And you know, some 2 years ago, I told this very committee out here that we will deliver at an average of a school per week. There were many people who were skeptical about it. But we've delivered 170 state-of-the-art schools, which exceeds, on average, a school per week. State-of-the-art schools would mean that you have a school that's certainly worth not less than 20 million rand, that has a laboratory, that's a library, even if it's a primary school, that has ICT connectivity, that's fully furnished, and wherever possible to have the relevant sporting amenities. Now that's huge in the context of the disparities that we face in our country. So I think what we can celebrate is that indeed we are achieving well, but we have to continue to accelerate that because it is not sufficient. So yes, we've done well in the Eastern Cape, we've delivered more than 130 schools. Yes, indeed we have done well in the Western Cape, we've delivered more than 22 schools, and very soon it will be 25 schools. That is a national initiative, and a city program. But we don't go out there on the platform to say, the province has done nothing, it's a national department. We say, this is a system of education that belongs to all of us. So when we celebrate the delivery of quality infrastructure, and we certainly target those communities that have been historically deprived from these, of these resources, we say it is what education is provided for you. And this, taking away this contestation between provinces, there is competition and that's healthy amongst provinces in terms of achievement. But the contestation of the conflict that you could have where you basically speak in different voices could contribute to retarding progress rather than contributing to process, and we can celebrate the fact that as a system of education, we have worked extremely well. That does not detract from the possibilities of any member from the opposition to raise any matter of concern, because I've listened very attentively as Deputy Minister to members from the opposition who would raise particular matters, and they would let know. When they raise a matter, I take it up, follow it up, and very often in most cases they would say thank you very much for the intervention, because you become the ears and the eyes of this department, and we are grateful for that. The last point, and this would be my last point, Chairperson. We are involved in the box. We are only 22 years young. And we must recognize that the disproportionate development of our country is a reality. And therefore, you would have more mud schools in the Eastern Cape than you would have in the Western Cape or Gauteng. Therefore, you would have a much more rural setting in Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Eastern Cape as compared to Gauteng and the Western Cape. And we tend at times to forget the context of the challenges that we face. And we just assume that there is a standard without due regard to the context. We all know, for a fact, that it's extremely difficult to retain skills, professional skills in rural areas, whether in the Western Cape or anywhere else. And we just assume then that educators would want to, because of their commitment to this noble profession, want to go to a rural area and go and teach there. They do not understand how difficult it is to retain the skills in the rural areas, particularly for mathematics, science, and the languages. So that is something that we certainly would want you to be sensitive of. And for that reason, you would find that we have to intervene more often than not in those underdeveloped, socially, economically underdeveloped areas. So you would find how Gauteng and the Western Cape are almost marginally, they are much the same in terms of the achievement. But economically, in terms of the infrastructure development, they're much the same as well. So, but you would have the problems in the Eastern Cape, you would have them in the Limpopo, you would have them in KwaZulu-Natal. And these problems would persist until we address the issues of infrastructure, access, better education facilities, and better teaching opportunities that we create in those areas. So indeed, it takes more than a generation to turn it around. But I do believe with humility, and I say this with humility, that we are moving away from mediocrity and we are moving towards excellence. We haven't got there yet. But certainly the evidence is clear in terms of the annual national assessment, in terms of the international preliminary result of SACMAC itself, that this is it. And it becomes very, very interesting for us that when we don't perform well, you have certain individuals and certain members who basically utilize that report and say, but South Africa, in terms of SACMAC, is located here and this is the level of achievement. When we've gone beyond for the first time the mean, those members don't even remark on it. They say, you know, in grade 6, the teachers, in terms of this particular area, have not done well. Why are we afraid to celebrate our achievements, but at the same time, challenge the department in terms of its deficits? You can't be selective in terms of your criticism. And I think if we're mindful of that, we would certainly move forward as a nation. But I would want to say from the ministry side, we want to express our gratitude to this committee, to all political parties and all provinces for the kind of collective endeavor to achieve quality education. The challenges abound, but I think we are ready and willing to face it and to improve the quality of lives of our children. Thank you very much for your opportunity, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DM, for your input. Now, honorable members, I'll hand over to the DG to lead us on the presentation for... Okay, before I finish,
Chairperson, I'm so sorry. You might find, you may be wondering where the minister is. The minister and the deputy minister share responsibilities. Today there is a cabinet committee meeting which both of us have to attend. And the minister is at the cabinet committee meeting and I am here. So you know, one of us has to be there because it deals with education and other matters. So the apology, please. Not the apology of the minister, and it's not because she doesn't want to be here, it's simply because she has that particular commitment. So thank you very much.
DG, lead us on the presentation. Let us hear what our department has been doing in the year 2014-15, just following the input that the DM has just come up with. The achievements and also the challenges that might be there, but as per your APP and all the plans that we have, let us see how much of the targets we have reached, we have managed to achieve, though we have read and you are saying, personally for, I'm not saying we have not been doing well, but I mean to say from what we have read and attacked and lead you the documents, 2015-16 was still the department achieving most of the targets that you have set for yourself, of which it's a good move that we have observed, but lead us to the presentation, we'll engage with it, and as I said at the beginning, comment where we need to and criticize constructively where we need to, because we all believe we are here to build and to make sure that our learners and public that they do get the quality public education that you are there for. Did you? Then over to you.
Again, Chairperson, there's another policy, and that's for the Deputy Minister. We have to take part in the debate on education in the National Council of Provinces at 2 o'clock. So if I am excused, if you allow me to be excused for the afternoon session, if you continue beyond that, I'll be ministerial rule, because I don't want to let Parliament down. It's also part of our accountability to the other House of Parliament.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, Chairperson, thank you very much for affording us the opportunity once more to come and present the annual report for the year 2015-2016. Chair, let me also indicate that we have the branch heads present here except for two. One is on sick leave and has been on sick leave for quite some time, Ms. Vivian Carlson. And then Ms. Jobeka has been assigned by the minister to take up another responsibility which required the minister. So otherwise the rest are here, and including Chairperson, the presentation will be covering the three parts that are indicated there. The first part will be essentially the overview of the delivery environment. And the second part, which is the core of the presentation, will be the performance of programs. The digital projector and the slides look a bit hazy. They are not as clear as one would like them to be. But I trust that you rely on the handouts that we have issued to you. We've just effected changes in the two tables. The one is about the summary of the five programs, and the table where we effected a very small, slight changes is the table containing the infrastructure delivery from schools up to sanitation, water, and electricity. Those are the small changes that we've effected in terms of the presentation that was circulated to me, to honorable members. I'll also be sharing this presentation with the CFO in recognition of the authority accorded by the PFMA to the role of the CFO. So we'll be sharing that this presentation together. As the Deputy Minister already covered this area quite substantially, we're presenting achievements, we're presenting performance against planned targets, and of course the last part will reflect where the investment of government and taxpayers has gone. This is the first part of the overview of the service delivery environment. And here we are seeing, as the Deputy Minister correctly pointed out and you remarked in your opening remarks, Chairperson, that we carry out our responsibilities, of course, flowing from the Constitution, but mainly from the National Education Policy Act, particularly Section 3 and Section 8 of the Act. Section 3 is about developing norms and standards, like all national departments. Section 8 is about monitoring compliance with norms and standards. And of course, the statutory role of the department is as indicated below. Well, Chairperson, we also provide what we call technical leadership and oversight, setting maintenance of norms, but again, taking our cue from the Constitution, Section 3 of the Chapter 3 of the Constitution, that various spheres of government are distinct, interrelated, and interdependent, working with and through provinces in carrying out our responsibility. We are essentially guided by the National Development Plan, whose implementation plan is the medium-term strategic framework, inextricably linked with our action plan, 27 goals, which has now been aligned with action plan 2019 towards schooling 2030. 13 of the 27 goals are about improving learning outcomes. Of course, we also cover the six areas that I emphasized in the medium-term strategic framework. In summary, Chair, in terms of the MTSF goals, we're really about improving quality of teaching and learning and using the utilization of teachers to do that. We're also about improving our assessment regime to improve to take us to improve learning outcomes. We also place emphasis on the implementation of early childhood development to build a solid foundation, particularly pre-grade R, to ensure that learners are school ready when they come to grade one. And I'm sure you'll remember, Chair, that the presidency carried out a study which revealed that in the main, learners are not school ready, and It's for that reason that we started implementing what the Deputy Minister referred to, the National Curriculum Framework for all our early childhood development centers to improve quality. And I'll expand more on that as part of the presentation. We also about strengthening accountability at all levels of the system, but focusing mainly in terms of functionality of schools. And we also about strengthening partnership, because we believe that as education we cannot do it alone. We have to work with civil society, we have to work with business, we have to work with a number of stakeholders in our country to realize the vision of quality education. Some of our main achievements have been about, you know, delivering the mentorship program to enhance district support, focusing on circuit managers in the identified districts, particularly districts of the three provinces that have not been performing well perennially, if I may add. We've also observed 10,000 newly qualified educators entering the system, which means there is hope in the sector. We've also seen an increased number of learners who enrolled for grade 12 last year, which exceeded the number of 2014 by 51,000. And of course, we've also seen a drop in the results to 70.7%. One of our major achievements have been in areas of reading, and in this regard, the implementation of EGRA to 1,000 schools, of course, linking it to the delivery of the 1,000 libraries per annum. And the other achievement, of course, is the implementation of a uniform curriculum in your early childhood development centers, which is the NCF. We've also seen the introduction of the three-stream model, strengthening the academic stream, particularly focusing on increasing the number of math and science candidates in line with the NDP, which says that by 2030 we need to increase the number to 450,000, and that increase is beginning to show, and it will continue to grow, particularly in 2016-2017, but it has already started in 2015. We've also undertaken measures to strengthen the implementation of ICT in the basic education sector, and I'll expand more in the course of our presentation. That has seen the launch of Operation Pakisa on the 2nd of October 2015 by the President last year. It has also seen a phenomenal growth or increase in the number of schools that got connected and improved the position of South Africa in the rating of the World Economic Forum by two places as well. We've also recorded one of our major achievements in the Moot Court, where our learners got position 1 and 3, and they have been participating, competing with about 12 countries in the world. We've also seen an increase, as the Deputy Minister said, an increase from 9.2 million learners who benefit from the National School Nutrition Program to 9.6 million learners, particularly from quintile 1 up to quintile 3. Part 2, Chairperson, focuses on the 5 programs. Of course, education remains an apex of priority in terms of the delivery agreement that is outcome 1, which looks at improving the quality of basic education linked to the sector plan, which is Action Plan 2019 towards schooling 2030. This is the summary of the 5 programs, and this summary is extremely significant, Chairperson. It compares 2015, 2016 with 2014 and 2015. You will appreciate the fact that in 2014, 2015, we had 26 indicators. In the year under review, we had 31 indicators. And of course, the summary of all that is that with increased number of indicators, overall, it shows that the sector has improved from 84.6% to 87.1%. That's the overall performance. Program one is really about supporting the work that we do in the department, which is about providing strategic and administrative support services. In the interest of time, Chairperson, I'll just be glancing through some of these slides to indicate that all indicators have been achieved. Green is an indication that we have achieved in all those indicators. And this program really focused on providing training to the staff at DBE. As the Deputy Minister indicated, it's about VOTE 14. We also recruited interns, 66 interns, we trained 22. We also provided bursaries to about 49 officials at the department. We also provided labor relations services where grievances had to be dealt with. And you can see that 164 grievance meetings were held. Two disciplinary hearings also took place. And all of these were carried out within the stipulated period. As we all know, that in the public service, one of the challenges is to keep to the stipulations of the policy and the relevant regulations. In terms of legal services, this is the work that we've carried out. We've dealt with 44 correspondents. We dealt with 20 litigation. Two of those have been disposed, have been finally dealt with. 18 are ongoing. We also, through this unit, we received legal opinions, three legal opinions. This unit also dealt with 10 pieces of legislation. In terms of the role of our media, it's been a busy year, not very hectic, but quite busy. 72 interviews were carried out, and then 18.024, we've got followers on Facebook, and I'm sure we're hoping to grow that number to even more. We also had 37,000 on Twitter, and approximately 3,000 messages were received through our email system. Internal audit, it is a function that is growing, that requires more and more attention in the department. The directorate has completed, approved two audit reports, and the audit verification as per the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation requirements. We are looking at beefing up the unit in line with strengthening our capacity in terms of internal control environment. With respect to international relations, our cooperation with China continues, which delivered and donated a planetarium. Gauteng benefited from that planetarium. And given the centrality of Gauteng, we believe that other provinces can continue also to benefit from the planetarium. We also continue our cooperation agreement with Cuba. The Deputy Minister accompanied the Deputy President in the recent visit to Cuba in October 2015. We've also signed a memorandum of understanding with the French Embassy. Part of it, just like all other countries that have requested similar partnership with us. It includes promoting the French language, but also working with business from France and pursuing projects such as aviation schools, etc., etc. As we know that air buses are manufactured in France. We also continue our cooperation agreement with Japan through JICA. We've received an additional volunteer to come and enhance the services that are provided through JICA, and we are implementing the JICA program in Northwest, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga. We also hosted three international delegations from Nigeria, from Norway, and including Swaziland. Our strategic planning, coordination, and research has also been quite busy. Of course, working on the annual performance plan, as well as the review of the strategic plan, and analyzing feedback from provinces and public entities such as UMAMISI and SAIS. We've also consolidated information where we need to be reporting to Treasury, Parliament, Cabinet, and other sharing information with other government departments in terms of our outcomes. We have improved our MPET scores. MPET is the monitoring tool that we use in government. All 10 departments are subjected through this exercise, and we have improved our score from 54% to 66%, which means that we do comply with basic legal and regulatory requirements from level two upwards. Well, in terms of our secretariat has also been coordinating activities that are related to meetings. 62 of such meetings have taken place. And research, monitoring, and evaluation, we've been busy with the evaluation of the implementation of CAPS. We've also participated in the evaluation of the implementation of Funza Lushaka program, the National School Nutrition Program. We've also been engaging with the data from Stats SA in terms of government household survey. The Chief Directorate has also been involved with coordinating district managers' capacity building workshops, working with the University of Stellenbosch, funded by UNICEF. The next program, Chairperson, is curriculum policy monitoring and support, which is about teaching and learning. The first few indicators have been achieved. We've not achieved the target under Kari Kude. We've performed below the target as indicated there, which shows that the number of learners that are supposed to benefit from this program are indeed reducing, which means that the program is increasingly moving towards meeting its target. May I also emphasize that the targets were based on the community survey which was conducted in 2009, which went up to ward system level, which gives you the level of detail that can afford you the insight into how many people are able to read and write and how many are unable or cannot read and write. The next community survey only happened concluded in June this year, and therefore it would have been extremely difficult even to anticipate setting appropriate targets, because you depend on the community survey, which gives you the level of data that can help you to update your data so that you link the number of those that you have covered with the number of those that still need to be covered. That's the explanation that I'm giving. And therefore, the target was way far, far above than the number of learners that were available for this program. Taking into account natural attrition as well in the system, which could have also attributed to our inability to meet this target. And the details of this program, Chairperson, just to look at the main achievements or main deliverables, we have delivered 1,000 school libraries linked to our reading campaign, which was led by the Minister and the Deputy Minister. We've also implemented EGRA in line with the delivery of these libraries. In terms of multi-grade and rural education, the main deliverable there has been providing a toolkit for teachers who teach in the rural areas. In the toolkit, you'd find things like ready-made lesson plans, materials that teachers in these schools are able to use because they don't have enough time to prepare given the challenges of multi-grade that they are dealing with in these schools. We've also focused on developing the policy around rural education. The minister has appointed a ministerial task team which has even started doing more research around rural education, given the fact that the majority of our schools, about 6,000 of our schools out of 25,000 who happen to be in your geographically rural areas. The incremental introduction of African languages, Chairperson, you remember that we had 3,553 schools which were identified as schools that are not offering any of the African languages. We've now started to implement for grade one, after implementing the pilot, up to 264 schools, and the implementation is proceeding well. The major impediment here, Chair, is the provision of teachers. Teacher posts are decreasing year to year, and of course, owing to the allocation that we are getting from Treasury. The needs are increasing, but the financial resources are reducing. If we had enough resources to get teachers to teach, we would have covered 3,553 schools. But the financial resources that we could secure afforded us only to cover 264 schools. The training has continued in line with prioritizing inclusive education, particularly the implementation of curriculum differentiation, the policy on screening, identification, assessment, and support. We've also continued to implement CAPS for South African Sign Language, moving to grade 9 and 10, and in the year 2016-2017, we'll be moving to the next grades. We've also started to implement the policy to support learners with severe and profoundly intellectual disabilities. And you'll recall, Chair, that there is a court case which involved the Western Cape Education Department and the administration, including national government, in respect of learners with profound intellectual disabilities. We've met with NGOs and we've developed the framework. We worked with experts. We have now started to implement that framework to address what the court has ordered as both provincial and national government to do. Early childhood development, the major deliverable, isolating two out of those that are there, is of course the implementation of a uniform curriculum in the form of the National Curriculum Framework for birth to 4 years old. We've been able to distribute it to all our centers, copies of this curriculum. We've also carried out training to 5,898 practitioners at level 4, level 5, and level 6. And the intention is to ensure that ECD practitioners meet the minimum requirements that are required in terms of the qualifications framework for educators. This is some of the materials that are provided to ECD centers, and this is some of the pictures which were taken from the roundtable discussions, which afforded role players in ECD to come together to evaluate progress made by the sector. And I must indicate that the sector was commended by role players in terms of the progress that we have made in ECD. LGSM, Chairperson, in line with the explanation that was provided by both the Deputy Minister and yourself, our role is to provide norms and standards and to develop policy. But in terms of the workbooks, given the overwhelming evidence which came from surveys after surveys which were conducted about unavailability of text, which underpinned the poor performance in both regional, national, and international tests, DBE felt obliged to come up with the workbooks, providing workbooks from grade R up to grade 9, as the Deputy Minister correctly pointed out, close to 55 million workbooks that are provided to learners in the system. The project has grown to the extent that we are able to track how many workbooks have been delivered. And I must say that unfortunately, the same cannot be done in terms of textbooks, because it's a responsibility of provinces. We are working on systems to make sure that the lessons learned from delivering workbooks are also used in terms of increasing textbook coverage. We mainly depend on self-reporting from provinces, as Table 10 and Table 11 in the annual report would show. But I must say that given the weaknesses of self-reporting, your honorable members, honorable chair, will concur that the figures that we get do not always confirm what you find on the ground. Math, science, and technology, the main issue there has been the implementation of CAPS for technical high schools. Apart from what the Math, Science, and Technology grant has been able to deliver from ICT resources to even training and the rest of the other equipments and resources which were provided to schools. And we've started implementing CAPS for technical high schools in grade 10. The numbers are quite heartwarming. Numbers of learners who are now starting to enroll in grade 10 for areas of specialization which have now been introduced, as well as technical science and technical mathematics. The intention, Chair, is to move the split from 80% academic pathway to about 60% technical vocational and technical occupational stream, with only 40% towards the academic pathway. Deliverables included training to prepare the system for implementation in grade 10, as the numbers indicate there. We trained both teachers and subject advisors at the same time. We did not train to subject advisors and said to them, go and cascade. We trained all of them at the same time, and we subjected them to training of accredited centers, which are spread throughout the country because of the value that we attach to building the three-stream model in this country. We've also been working with TeachSA, particularly to respond to scarce skills of math and science, particularly in areas that are very difficult to attract math and science teachers like Eastern KZN, Limpopo, and so on. Working with provincial administrations, we've been able to recruit teachers to those areas. Focus schools, it's another area of focus that we are working on in line with our focus on the three-stream model. And of course, we are supporting the existing focus schools. Our intention is to grow the number. We're looking at coming up even with more focus schools such as aviation schools, etc., etc. In terms of ICT chair, digital content, we've developed offline static interactive digital educational resource. Our workbooks are interactive, as indicated there. We've also gone into developed digital textbooks, hybrid textbooks. We've also distributed 1,575 offline digital content packs. We've also developed 40,000 grade 10 technical mathematics textbooks. We've also we've got a dedicated channel, a DBE channel, which focuses on supporting what teachers are doing in the classroom with a schedule of which subjects for which grades are covered, which topics are going to be covered for the entire year, and we use channel 201, and schools have already started to access that. In terms of connectivity, 884 schools have been provided with TV sets and the rest of the other equipments that go with that. For service providers that deliver in terms of the license obligation, which we call Universal Service and Access Obligation, USAO, 1,544 schools have been provided with connectivity. And the point that I made earlier on when I talked about achievements of ICT, it pushed our connectivity level from 48% in October 2015 to now 54% in 2016. Our target is that by 2019, all schools in South Africa should be connected. Connectivity is not a panacea to improving our learning outcome, but it would contribute immensely in improving learning outcomes, in resourcing teachers, in providing, in affording teachers to be exposed to better teaching techniques and so on, because they'll have access to the best materials online. We've also launched, as I said, Operation Pakisa. We are reporting on the mini lab, which took place during the year under review. The mini lab started on the 22nd of June to the 3rd of July. The full lab then continued from the 6th of September to the 2nd of October, when the president launched Operation Pakisa. And Operation Pakisa focuses on five areas: digital content development, teacher professional development, e-administration, which is about the modernization of SASMs, and quite a lot is happening there in modernizing SASMs. The provision of ICT equipment, and of course, the last leg is connectivity, which the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services is assisting us with. In terms of curriculum, Chair, the focus last year was really to heighten our efforts around recruitment of learners, because we could see the dwindling numbers of learners who enrolled for the Karikude program. The minister led eight of those roadshows. We covered eight provinces. The campaign registered 329,641 learners. We provided LTSM, That included labs. Labs is learner assessment portfolios. These are portfolios that are filled at the end of the program and given to the South African Qualifications Authority to evaluate the competency of learners, whether they are able to read and write. If you allow me, Chair, South Africa is among the very few countries that do this, which subject a program like this to an assessment whether the requisite competencies are demonstrated by learners. Countries like Cuba and others, all that they do after rolling out the program, they commission a research, people sample and check whether people are able to read and write. In South Africa, we subject every learner to a competency assessment to check whether learners are able to read and write through the evaluation of labs. And of course, eventually, those that went through the assessment of the labs are 294,317 who completed and who got their labs submitted. And to date, we can report that out of 4,700,000 learners that we targeted, we've now achieved 4,273,373 in the program. This program has also received 6 awards from 2009. The latest award has been received from UNESCO, which was awarded to the program just a few weeks ago. These are the figures, Chairperson, broken down cumulatively, as you can see, going up to 4.2 million. The job opportunities created, the figures are also provided there, and again, cumulatively over these years that are indicated here. The Department of Labor in Gauteng at some point also awarded this program an award for being an outstanding program in job creation. Job opportunities for females, these are percentages at the bottom there, and then right on top indicating the actual numbers of jobs which were created for females. And the females are the biggest beneficiaries of this program, and I'm sure you will appreciate that with your honorable members, given the fact that unemployment in this country hit the most the youth and females of this of our country. Talking about youth, this is the extent to which the program has also been able to deal with unemployment among young people. Young people constitute 66% of people who are unemployed in South Africa. So this program helps a lot in reducing unemployment among young people. These are just the dates of the graduations indicated there per province. And these are just the pictures. I thought that the figures are important, but the pictures give even more to the message of the figures and the text. I've never attended graduations as big as the ones that were held for Kakude, even when I graduated in my first degree. I mean, up to 7,000 of people who would attend these graduations. Program 3, it's really about teachers. It's about teacher provisioning. It's about institutional development, governance and management. We have not delivered in terms of using competency assessment to appoint principals, which is a directive from the National Development Plan. And there are two reasons for that, Chairperson. The first one is that this matter remains unresolved from the ELRC, but we thought that given the fact that it was an imperative of the National Development Plan, we must put it in the annual performance plan. We were bold to put it in the APP, but unfortunately unresolved issues from the ELRC in concluding discussions on this matter delayed finalizing this issue and reaching the numbers that we had hoped to reach. The second issue is that given the fact that all SMS members do go through competency assessment, we've brought in the Department of Public Service and Administration also to help us in fine-tuning the tool, the batteries for competency assessment, so that even the issues that are finding it difficult to reach agreement in the ELRC, with the help of the Department of Public Service and Administration, we hope that we'll be able to speed up that process. We have also not been able to meet the target in respect of using the diagnostic assessment tool for English first additional language and maths. Our assessment indicates that our targets were a bit overzealous. We set too high targets. That's one. The other one is that we needed a dedicated service that can help us to deal with this. And in the remedial measures, we have put mechanisms in place, Chairperson, because we learn from our experience to deal with this area of underperformance. We've also partially achieved, in terms of monitoring the utilization of school profiles to improve learner performance, and going forward, we've decided to allocate more time and more resources so that moderators are not overstretched in doing this work, and there's dedicated time, resources to carry out this indicator as well. These are the details of the program. As I indicated earlier, 10,000 young people joined the teaching profession. The final figures increased to 12,000 owing to delays in appointment and so on. We also unfortunately lost about 1,381 young and qualified educators who left the system, and which constitutes about 82% of those who have been appointed temporary posts of 52%, in substitute posts 30%. In 2015, we've received 4,723 Funza Lushaka pazas. We've been able to place within 6 months 87% of them, which is an increasing number, an improving rate of placement. And overall, over time, we've been able to place 94%. The numbers are broken down, delineated per province, as indicated in terms of the first, second, third, and the fourth quarter. And we're giving the totals there. Labor relations, the main issues that we dealt with was the report on the selling of posts. That report is now due, Chairperson, to come back to your committee. The Minister and the Deputy Minister are almost ready to come and present the progress that we have made in implementing that report. You'd recall that after the findings of the reports were presented, the investigation team requested for extension to cover some of the cases that required forensic investigation. We'll be coming back to your committee to give you an update on that report. The annual national assessment, we've also now gone past the stage of negotiating with unions. The last Council of Education Ministers approved a new integrated framework for assessment in basic education, which has three legs. The first one is systemic assessment, which will be implemented every 3 years. The second leg of it is diagnostic assessment, which will be voluntary, an item bank of assessment items will be made available to teachers to use on regular basis at their own leisure whenever they wish to do so. And then the third leg of the integrated assessment framework is what we call the summative assessment, which is going to be mandatory for the system. We are looking at grade 3, 6, and 9. There is unanimity around grade 6 and 9. We still thinking whether we have to subject grade 3 learners to a mandatory summative assessment. Summative assessment, by the way, means that the marks will contribute to the progression of learners. So we'll be implementing that. Funza Lushaka, bursary program. For the year under review, Chairperson, 13,980 students were awarded with Funza Lushaka bursary. And as indicated, overall, we've been able to place 94% of those who graduated. A total of 4,110, which is 87%, we've been able to place within 6 months. And this is the breakdown. You can see that provinces are indeed improving in terms of placement of those who complete. Human resource development, the main deliverable there has been training of circuit managers, with a view of cascading training to managers of our schools, principals, and school management teams. Given the partnership that we have with the union, the South African Honorable ACME, from the teacher union collaboration, we are allocating money, I think it's about 40 million, to all the five unions in the system. The SAOU focuses on capacity building for school managers, including circuit managers. The IQMS, a total of 341,326 educators were evaluated nationally, and DBE focused on the six provinces that are indicated there. We also went even further to provide support to KZN in terms of training the provincial task team to improve the implementation of IQMS. Whole school evaluation, the policy provides that 10% of schools must be evaluated. The rest of the schools rely on what we call school self-evaluation, which is a tool that will help all schools to identify areas of weaknesses and develop school improvement plans, SIP. We still monitoring that. 493 schools were externally evaluated, and the figures are indeed broken down to 303 primary schools, 155 secondary schools, 29 combined schools, and 9 special schools. And of course, provinces such as the Western Cape, Gauteng, the amount of work that has been carried out there amounted to 48%. Otherwise, the rest had to rely on school self-evaluation that was conducted by individual schools. Continuing professional teacher development, we've recognized the achievement of teachers. Some of your honorable members were part of that event, which was held in February, on the 27th of February. What is heartwarming about what happened there, apart from the fact that this event was graced by your honorable members and the honorable deputy president, is the fact that people who were beneficiaries of the awards that were given were fairly young people in the profession, which means that there's hope in this profession. We are working with SACE. We are continuing to work with SACE to ensure that all teachers are registered and they meet the requirements of operating in the profession. And by the end of this year, SACE had been able to register 1,000 129,014 at the end of the financial year. The reports also show that 33,160 educators at all levels, all categories, were participating in the CPTD activities and programs. We are also working with the British Council in the training of subject advisors as well as teachers in this regard. Education management, governance and development, we've done some work there, Chair, but what is worth mentioning is again the training of circuit managers in modules of financial management, which we hope they'll be able to cascade to school management teams and to school governing bodies. And as you can see that principals also benefited from this training, which is endorsed by the South African Council of Educators. Here is some of the evidence of the activities that we refer to. Teacher development, implementation, HODs have been trained around math and science. A 1+4 model implementation continues. Preparation for grade 10, TAPS for technical high schools. We did that, training of teachers, training of subject advisors in the 9 areas of specialization plus technical math and technical science. That has been covered. Program 4. Program 4 is about planning, information and assessment. Obviously, we don't have data on the annual national assessment owing to the fact that schools that eventually arrived were only 200 schools that were able to give us evidence of what they had written, and the data was not useful in terms of meaningful analysis and so on. So it couldn't amount to anything that we could report on or reflect on here. Both DPME and Treasury and even the AG accepted the fact that we accept the reality of the fact that the overwhelming majority of schools did not write the annual national assessment. These targets have also been met. Targets have been met, as indicated already, Chair, in terms of ANA was not written except for 200 schools. A national senior certificate, as already reported on, we saw an increase in the number of learners who enrolled, increase even in the number of number of learners in the examination centers, and of course a decrease in the overall pass rate. I've already given a detailed explanation as to the new integrated annual national assessment framework, which will be implementing, I think, from 2018, and which will be implemented every 3 years. International assessments, the Deputy Minister spoke to SACMEC 4. We're still sitting with preliminary results of SACMEC 4, but I think you all know by now, Chair, that we've improved. We've reached the 500 center score, both in mathematics and reading for grade 6. What is causing the delay is because there are experts in South Africa and some officials in the department which were of the view that the improvement was quite big and they needed some more explanation from the SACMEC office based in Botswana. The officials and the experts from the SACMEC office met last week, and I've been informed that there's another meeting that should happen before we conclude and indicate that the results can now be officially released. We will be receiving the TIMSS results Just indicating that the assessment of teams has been done during the year under review. The results will be released on the 29th of November. So we are in an assessment season. So we'll be getting results for grade 5 and grade 9. Education management information system. What is worth mentioning there is improvements in LURIDS. 98.2% of ordinary schools comprising 92.5% of learners have been uploaded on the system. I've already indicated that we are also working on the modernization of SSLs. Physical planning, we have delivered in terms of school infrastructure by the end of February 2016. Only 570,026 units of furniture which were delivered and which constitute 52% of the total units to be delivered. The delivery is at 52% due to delays. As I said, concurrent functions, chairperson, in provinces such as Limpopo and Mpumalanga. And this have led to the extent of even DBE directing some of the consignments which were meant for Eastern Cape, especially to deal with the situation of Wani, directing that school furniture must be taken to Limpopo to obviate challenges of learners reporting to school without school furniture. Learner transport, the provision of learner transport continues to grow. It grows to 486,448 learners who are transported, which translates to 104% against the target that has been set. Replacement of inappropriate structures. The Eastern Cape province is the main beneficiary of this. Close to 80 to 90% of our city goes towards the Eastern Cape. 163 schools have been delivered in this regard. 211 schools in the Eastern Cape with low learner level enrollment under the rationalization accounted for the underperformance in this program. In other words, we are saying the 400 million that we could not spend was due to the fact that if we were to go ahead and build those schools in a few years' time, those buildings will be standing empty because we need to rationalize some of the schools. Many rural areas are getting depopulated, and the Eastern Cape is experiencing that, especially where the chronic need for facilities are required. We've also then provided sanitation to 412 schools, water to 605, electricity to 294 schools. And the figures are broken down as indicated Chairperson. Job creation, these are the figures, 32,000 jobs, 786 job opportunities which were created for those categories that are indicated there. In terms of financial planning, the minister reviews the national norms for school funding policy every year. We also monitor as to which provinces comply, and we write even to those provinces that that do not comply. And the minister this time around also wrote to the Minister of Finance, requesting the Minister of Finance to intervene in provinces that are not complying with national norms. And of course, the analysis has been the medium-term expenditure framework, the implementation of annual performance plans, but also quarterly performance reports from provinces. QLTC. The role of QLTC is to galvanize civil society towards providing quality education. It has participated in a number of campaigns such as Drop All and Read, including instances in Vuani and other areas where we're experiencing challenges around disruptions to schooling linked to service delivery protests. QFTC has been able to play a role there. District level planning, what is worth mentioning is the development of guidelines for standard routine operations, draft recruitment and selection criteria guidelines for district officials as part of building the capacity of districts to be able to provide support to schools, monitoring the filling of substantive vacancies, the implementation of draft norms and standards for staffing in education districts, the capacity building program, which is mainly driven by data utilization, involving the district officials across the country, as indicated in the national workshops which were carried out, the National Education Excellence Awards in recognizing districts that are performing well from the 81 districts. School level planning, just enhancing the capacity of circuit managers, working with a team of school improvement support coordinators called CISCO, in 5,517 schools, but also we provided support, for instance, to the three provinces that are perennially underperforming, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo, to improve performance. In terms of provincial monitoring, we do that through the call center. We've been able to respond exceeding the target that is set by the presidency, as indicated there. We also able to resolve issues coming through the presidency, working with provincial education departments. The rate at which we are able to resolve to go to our attention is also indicated and detailed in the figures that are provided. Website queries, we've also been able to deal with all these queries, the walk-ins, cases, 65 of those were resolved. Customer relations management, again, we've been able to exceed the target of 70% that has been set by the presidency. School readiness, we've been involved in activities that involve 931 schools from 50 education districts, where officials from DBE and provinces are monitoring school readiness beginning of the year. And we can report that the 2016 academic year took off quite smooth. The National Education Evaluation and Development Unit, in the name, the focus of NEDU has been around special schools, which has been an area which was not part of their attention. The data collected from the schools, 176 in 26 districts, is still being processed by the NEDU team, and at the right time, we'll be getting a report from them. The last program, Chair, is around education enrichment services, which is the social cohesion program, as the Deputy Minister indicated earlier on. It's about school health. It's also about the curriculum enrichment programs. We have been able to meet all the targets that are provided in this program. We've even exceeded the figures. This information was also covered by the Deputy Minister. 21,000 schools, 177 benefit from quintile 1 to 3, 9.6 million learners out of 12, a total of 12 million learners in the system benefit from the National School Nutrition Program. What is worth mentioning is also the implementation of the deworming program, which is quite crucial in enhancing the health of learners. And these are some of the pictures, just attesting to the figures, the text and the narrative that is provided there. In terms of health promotion, what is worth mentioning, Chair, is that a total of 229,554 grade 4 girls received the human papilloma virus vaccination, and altogether 1,111,705 learners received health services. That is what has been achieved in working with the Department of Health. In terms of school safety, we are doing work there with the Department of with South African Police Services. But what is worth mentioning, Chair, is that violence in schools and abuse of drugs are some of the issues that undermine the efforts that we are making in the system. This is just an indication of the vaccination of learners working with the Department of Health. This is just some of the evidence that we're providing in terms of school safety. Curriculum enrichment and sports in education. What is also important here is that 6,722 learners participated in the particularly Coral Ice Step Forth. But what is also worth mentioning here, Chair, is the integration of this program, both in the Coral Ice Step Forth. And you'll also see in some of these pictures, we do not unfortunately present a rainbow nation. And we believe that it's a major weakness of the implementation of the program. The Council of Education Ministers identified this challenge and has directed HEDCOM to work on mechanisms to ensure that we start reflecting a picture of the rainbow nation. The moot court, I've reported already on the moot court, indicated that we got position one and position three in the finals, which were held in The Hague in the Netherlands. Nkosi Albert Luthuli Oral History Program, it's a very important program. 64 learners and 13 educators took part in 2015 national finals. And these are some of the pictures of our learners in The Hague participating in the moot court. And winning position one and three, as indicated. In terms of sports, these are the activities that have been covered. And these activities, Chairperson, include learners in your rural areas, as you can see, as a category for those learners. And the K. Motsepe Foundation invests quite a lot of money in this. And I was saying to people, if a businessman like Mr. Patrice Motsepe is able to invest in an organization, then we should know that at least there's faith in that organization. Bill of Rights activities, these are the number of learners and provinces and the activities which took place. And these are some of the pictures of the narrative that I've gone through. You can see that it's soccer, it's chess, and it's a long jump. The national flag is part of social cohesion, nation building. These are the activities that took place, 99 schools in the Northwest. I'm sure Honorable Mokoto will be very happy to see this. And 77 schools in the Northern Cape. Honorable Basson will also applaud this exercise. 322 national flags were installed in schools in the Eastern Cape. This program, we're carrying it out with the Department of Arts and Culture. Well, areas of underperformance, Chair, as indicated earlier on, remedial measures are really to ensure that we now have the community survey of 2016, and I think that as we complete the program, our targets are more refined than what we have in 2015-2016. In terms of the National Senior Certificate, the cognitive demand of question papers will continue to increase. What we'll be doing is to train teachers to bring them in line with the cognitive demand of question papers. I need to mention, Chairperson, that we are benchmarking our papers with the best in the world. Previously, we benchmarked with three examination authorities, which included Scottish, South Wales, I've forgotten the third one, Cambridge. And we are starting with a new exercise of benchmarking, which is also going to include Kenya. We've received information that Kenya is one of those examination bodies that are commanding authority in the continent of Africa. We've also benchmarked our curriculum, and the feedback that we received is that our curriculum is rates among the best in the world. The only weakness is that it's too wide and a bit not deep enough. And what we are going to be doing as we continue, because curriculum review and curriculum development is an ongoing process, is to narrow the scope and focus on the depth of our curriculum. So that's what we are doing in terms of improving our learning outcomes. In terms of competency assessment, as already indicated, our focus is to finalize negotiations at the ELRC, finalize the competency battery with the DPSA, and then move faster than we did in the year under review. In terms of monitoring school profiles, as already indicated, we'll dedicate more time and resources for this exercise to make sure that we meet what has been set as a target. Self-diagnostic tool, we've realized that our targets were again a bit over the mark, as indicated earlier on. We've looked at our targets and we have strengthened mechanisms for implementing the self-diagnostic assessment tool for English first additional language and mathematics. Chair, if you allow me to request the CFO to come and carry out her responsibilities in terms of the TSME.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm just going to present the expenditure at the end of the audited expenditure at the end of the financial year and the audit outcome. At the end of the financial year or at the end of the audited figures are reflected on the slide on the board there. Only two programs spent a bit low on their expenditure, the others are reflected 100%. The amounts that were remaining were very small. The reasons for under expenditure, one of the programs that underspent was program two. The reason for under expenditure was that was mainly on the EPWP grant due to the issue of administrative delays in capturing the required data into the EPWP electronic system. There has been an agreement between the departments, and there was a challenge as the system was not included in the original plan of the agreement. And then with respect to program four, the under expenditure on the program is mainly on the ICT program. The process of consultation on rationalization of schools took longer than anticipated, and it impacted on the spending trends of the project. The mitigating measures for the other expenditure, the department held meetings with EPWP unit in the Department of Public Works. Both departments agreed on amendments of the application form for volunteers to meet the categories required by the EPWP. And then for program four, consultation on rationalization of schools has been completed in some areas, and there's still continuation in others. And then this slide is just showing expenditure per economic classification. And there was a number of areas where in some there was a bit of over expenditure, in others under expenditure. Goods and services, the overspending on the item was due to procurement of provision of school furniture for non-ACD schools that was not budgeted for under the ACD schools. And the department will ensure that during the adjustment budget, funds are shifted to the from the capital budget to cover the remaining commitments. This was the problem in the last financial year, because although funds were shifted, they were not enough to cover the over expenditure. And then for transfers and subsidies, the over expenditure was due to transfers to foreign or international organizations which are made in dollars and euros. And as we can recall, last year the rent dropped significantly. Although the amounts sometimes are increased, you find that it's not enough to cover. So we went to Treasury to ask for the increase, but they would not agree because we had already made the payment. So in future, we'll make sure that we estimate higher amounts and get necessary approvals before transfers are made. And then for payments of capital assets, it's the one that I explained on the city that that had consultations on rationalization. And then this slide is just showing audit outcomes for the first half. And as you can see, one province dropped. So the number of provinces that received qualified opinions are three instead of in the 2014-15 financial year there were two, now there are three, and one with disclaimer, the others with unqualified with findings, and only one with unqualified without findings. And what the department is doing to assist the provinces in the HEDCOM subcommittee on finance, the issues that are raised by the Auditor General are discussed, and we assist each other on how to deal with the areas. But to add to that, one of the provinces wrote an official letter to the DG requesting assistance with particular areas, and we are busy assisting them. The others requested, but it was not formalized, but we have been working with provinces on selected areas that they asked for assistance. Hopefully in the next audit we'll see a different picture. And then for the department, we received an unqualified opinion with matter of emphasis. And the matter that was raised was on the national textbook cataloging process. The process was done by the department with National Treasury. But the challenge with that was the department did not get a written approval to indicate that they have been given authority to deviate from the normal process. And maybe just to explain a little bit more on that is that with the development of the catalogue, because books have to be evaluated individually, it was not going to be possible to do them following the normal supply chain processes. But as I indicated, the process, although it was followed, the department did not get the correct authorization. But to correct that, the department has written to National Treasury to get the necessary approval to deviate from the normal process. And then the other matter that was raised was expenditure management in the department. The department incurred irregular expenditure amounting to 599 million rand. There was also, on various areas, some of them were implementing agents not following proper supply chain management when they were procuring contractors, but the schools were built. It's just that there were some areas that were not followed correctly. And then the second one was unauthorized expenditure amounting to 253 million. This one was incurred on the procurement of school furniture for non-ACD schools, as well as the construction of libraries in all the provinces. There were, I think, two libraries per province, if I'm correct. But the reason for this was because they were not part of the framework that allocates the ACD schools. Hence, it was regarded as unauthorized expenditure. And then there was also a fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounting to 44 million. This was incurred on the Karibude program. With this one, what the program was doing was that they would pay the full amount in the first 2 months of the start of the program. And then there would be volunteers that had fewer learners, and some of them had deceased learners on their registers. So this amount is still under investigation, just to confirm that the full amount is indeed wasteful and fruitless. But in some cases, it has already been confirmed, and deductions are in the process of, they have been continuing already. So once it's confirmed, we'll be able to confirm if it's the whole amount or not, that is fruitless and wasteful. And then there was also an issue of consequence management that was raised, that effective and appropriate disciplinary steps were not taken against officials who made or permitted irregular expenditure and unauthorized and so forth. Now, on this one, there has been action that has already been taken. There were managers that were, letters were written to certain managers to explain how certain things came about. And then procurement and contract management. This was in relation to the ACD program. 14 contracts were awarded to bidders where preferential points were not allocated or not calculated according to the requirements of supply chain processes. And then there were also issues where memorandums of agreements with implementing agents were not amended or extended through approval by a delegated official. And this resulted in some of the irregular expenditure indicated earlier. And then on the annual financial statement, there was material misstatements of immovable, tangible capital assets, accruals, and commitments. These were identified by the auditors after financial statements were submitted. The chairperson asked it at the beginning that the department must indicate what they are doing, what we are doing to correct this, because this came up in the last audit as well. With regard to commitments, what we have done, or what we are still busy doing, we are collecting all the contracts from the implementing agents, because we did have some information from the unit, but it was not complete. So we are working with the unit to collect all the contracts to ensure that all the commitments that are reflected in the book are correct. And we have also captured all the projects per school, because previously we were capturing them per implementing agent. Now we are capturing them per school. And then with accruals, they have to write to the department indicating at the end of the financial year. But this process is not only happening at the end, it's continuing. They have to write on an official letterhead signed by either the CEO or the delegated official to confirm the accruals. And then with the assets, we have corrected the opening balances, because the issue was related to the opening balances. And then the chair also referred to payables. In the current, or in this audit, we did not have any payables. I know in the previous year it was an issue. We had engagements with all the implementing agents and indicated they are not allowed to pay on behalf of the department. They have to wait until we give them funding. So we did not have the same problem in the current year. Okay, I think I've covered the mitigation measures of all these areas. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure that you are still coming back. Okay. Thank you so much, DG, CFO, the whole delegation from the department for the presentation that you have just shared with us. thank you so much again for the improvements that we have seen in the department, notwithstanding the challenges that still continue. But before I open up for honorable members to engage and interact with the discussion, DG, in some of the findings, as the CFO is reporting to us, one can say some of them seem very minor, DG, though they go a long way, because at the end, really, if ever it lands out there to say they are fruitless, wasteful expenditure by the department, what I always think of, or anyone, once their monies that are said to be, they are categorized as being irregular, wasteless, fruitless, what comes to one's mind is to say, oh, these officials are wasting, these officials are squandering monies, you know. And hearing, getting the reasons why sometimes we're even finding those irregular and fruitless and another. For me, there are instances where we just need to tighten our, you know, it's nothing that much, but if we can follow the rules, we can follow the Auditor General rules to the T, I still believe these are the things that we can get rid of. Yet in as much as comparing with the previous years, it's very minimal, but the fact of the matter is still there. What is it that you are doing moving forward to make sure that we clean up when it comes to such? But going back to the targets really and the performance that we have seen from the department as per program, much improvement again has been shown, though we are going to be interrogating with the report, because I strongly believe, as the portfolio committee, there are areas in each and every program that we need to look at. And as I pleaded even at the beginning, more than just questioning, but we need to say what is it that we are contributing, even us as a portfolio committee, and playing our oversight role to make sure that you, department, you are always holding you accountable, but we also contribute in making sure that the challenges that have been raised, the challenges that you have observed, and then in future, we do away with them. But thank you very much for the presentation that we have received. Honorable members, can I now open up for you to engage the department on what we have received? Let me get the same paper so that can I see that job? Okay. Honorable, I will do this carefully. She always comes in. Honorable Basson, let me start with you so that I don't get any complaints. Honorable Basson, Honorable Khosa, Honorable Msimang, Honorable Davis, Honorable Mkoto, Honorable Mashabela, Honorable Khosa Mnguni, Honorable Padrat, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Khosa. In that order, please. Though allow the honorable members, will take maybe three health responses so that you can have a very open engagement when it comes to this. I will see where I will have to start. Yeah, I won't limit you with the number of questions, but we need to be reasonable. We know. Honorable Son.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, allow me to thank the DG first of all, to thank the DM for the input that he made and the presentation she has made so comprehensive that one doesn't know where to start. But I will take just a few. First of all, I appreciate the input on inclusive education for special needs. I really appreciate it. I appreciate it more because I'm the improvement as we are from the site oversight in Limpopo. The new Wheaties Dotolwana School at FC, where we have noticed that really now we need business in special schools. And on this, I will just put a word of encouragement to say that please let us make a business, our business, to improve the status quo of the school and of the special schools, and especially the resources. Let us make more news, Dr. Lannes and Witness. My question again on second point will be on the African languages. How far is the department in implementing the African languages in these small, at small than six schools that our children are mostly attending, but their languages are not catered for? How far are we with that implementation? On the ECD admission policy, yesterday I received a call from a parent of which I couldn't give the parents a clear guidance what to do next. I would like you to advise me, how can I advise this parent? The child is now 10-4 in January 2015, and they were still on the site. How do you name this site? The ECD site, social development site. And then was placed on somewhere on RR, of which. And then the child in January is turning 5. No school wants to take this child from the school setting because the child is not yet 6. Where can we place this child? Or how can I advise the parent? On the input of DM, there was that rural areas where the rural areas are not an attractive area to for the skilled people to go to. How do we do to assist the rural areas to be treated equally? Because I know that the incentive story is still a question mark because we implement it in a different way, in so much that we want to get the bit of it. I'm on the curriculum. The presentation is so clear and it's so good, more especially on job creation. Now, since this program is about to end, how are we going to accommodate those people who were involved in Karikude and us? That lastly, chairperson, it's SA Bank and Lourdes program that is so essential and so good, and more especially for administration and management purpose. Except the 98.2% that is benefiting in this. In numbers now, how many schools are not benefiting in this because of they are situated in areas that are not electrified? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the contribution by the DM and the presentation from the department chair. It is really a good presentation. You know, when they concluded the presentation, I said to myself, so, what is it that I'm going to ask now? I said, no, it's not only about asking questions, but to talk about what they presented, even if you don't have a question. Maybe sometimes when I speak, someone will be developing as questions. So the first issue I wanted to talk to Chair is what the Honourable Pastor has touched on a inclusive education. We are very happy, Chair, that the department is doing fine with regard to inclusive education. We have seen it when we went on oversight. But there are also challenges, Chairperson, with regard to learners with special needs. Special as they are, one would love that they be treated very special. The speed in which the department was running with regards to ACD, one would want to propose that it must be done as such with regard looking at the learners with special needs. I'm saying this, Chair, because of the number of the learners with special needs. There are not so many, but the challenge is that we are still having areas where we have those that are on a waiting list. We request department to move in a very fast speed to be able to cater for them. One other issue while I'm still on this is to check as to whether, well, with regard to learner transport, we are able to cater a transport that suits those learners with that type of disabilities. Chair, the other issue I wanted to talk to is the DM has touched on the free education, in which really he spoke of more than 80%. We're doing very fine with regard to free education. Then one would want to talk to it in this way, that we cannot claim as if we do not see what is happening on higher education with regard to the so-called fees must fall. I wanted to check, Chair, if really there is maybe an engagement between the DBE and higher education with regard to this challenge, since we know that if really it is not well taken care of, it means what we are busy preparing on NSC
they are going nowhere if we say we come to a halt, we don't move forward. Universities are not going on as they, what they are supposed to be doing. It means that the learners will be staying home next year. The other issue, I'm also happy of the explanation, Chairperson, with regard to the fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure. What I want to also check is to check, I understand there is internal audit, but what I want to know is how effective is this unit, internal audit? How often does it assist the department with regard to audit matters? Are they quick to be able to conscientize the department with audit issues? Or if yes, are they being taken seriously? I'm sharing the department chairperson the frustration that they are having with regard to the appointment of principals. I've heard the explanation, but we would want to request that the ELRC be engaged and that with whatever they are doing, speed be the name of the game. And lastly, Chair, I wanted to check if there's a time frame with regard to the task team that is dealing with ANA. Come 2017, what is going to happen? Are we going to implement? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would also like to start by complimenting the department for a very wide-ranging, very broad and comprehensive report, especially with so many positives. The percentages that were quoted are from 70 going up to 90s. This is very pleasing. It was pleasing also to learn that the department is doing so much to promote sport. We are very worried about the performance of our national teams, Chair, where be it in soccer, in cricket, now even in rugby, and the feeling is always there that maybe we start too late to train our youth and sports people. My concern, and perhaps a question, is whether the Department of Sport and Recreation also comes to the party. I'm asking this because when you drive around and you look at our schools, especially from the, look at the schools of the black, typically black schools, all black pupils, there are just no facilities. I realize that you deal with the learners themselves who organize competitions and things like that, and they compete with the best in the world. But there are these schools which completely lack facilities. There is a big outcry that we don't see our black sports people in rugby or in cricket, but you just wonder where they're going to learn, because in many of the black schools, the facilities are not. I was impressed, Chair, when the DG, both the DM and the DG, the focus on the three provinces that did not give us very good results for matric last year. We tend to say glibly that this is due to the rural nature of the three provinces. But with the exception of the Western Cape and Gauteng, South African provinces are typically rural. So my question is, what are the findings in these three and how can be they addressed? Why should Limpopo be so vastly different from the Free State, which to me is also rural, or from Mpumalanga, which is also very rural? So I'm just interested in the findings as you focus, as the department focuses on these three, to say what is lacking. And I've got a clarity-seeking question here when the DG spoke of rural education. I don't really know what distinguishes rural education from education in general. And I would like to know whether is the teacher who offers this rural education, did that teacher receive special training, or can any teacher go to the rural areas and offer this rural training? And secondly, whether the learners are on par with learners anywhere else. Do they get the same skills? Do they write the same exams? And so on. I was happy to hear DG talking about benchmarking and say they consider the standards throughout the world. They also look at the best performing nations in Africa. A special mention of Kenya was made. I'm very much interested in Zimbabwe because when I was at UNISA, our best students from the African pool came from Zimbabwe, especially in commercial and science subjects, they usually led the pack. I don't know whether the department has looked at the benchmarking in Zimbabwe. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mzuman. Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the department. My first three questions are aimed at the Deputy Minister from his opening remarks. The first one relates to what he said about fees must fall, and I think that we are all concerned about what this means for the sustainability of the education sector as a whole, not just higher education, but also basic education. And my particular concern is what happens if the universities don't reopen, as it seems like many of them won't be reopening this year, and that a lot of students may have to repeat next year with huge ramifications for universities. But it also has significant implications for the school system, because obviously there are graduates who are due to come into the system next year, and they won't be coming through into the system next year because they won't have their degrees on schedule. So this will have a massive impact. So I'd like to hear from the department, how many teaching graduates do you think are affected by this? Have you done any scenario planning on best and worst case scenarios? And what is your contingency plan to ensure that there's no shortfall in graduates coming through into the system next year? My second question is on teacher training, and the Deputy Minister mentioned reopening of teacher training colleges. Now, we've seen many alarming reports of poor teaching performance, both from the SACMEC report that we dealt with the last time we were here, but also through numerous other reports done by various statutory bodies, which point to the biggest problem in our education system being uneven teaching in the classrooms, and basically saying that poorer learners in disadvantaged communities aren't getting the same quality of teaching as more affluent learners. But there seems to be a curious business as usual approach to this, considering just how serious it is. And I'd like to know what steps are being taken to improve the quality of teacher training, and what are the specific plans on bringing back teacher training colleges, if indeed that is seen as the right thing to do to improve teacher training. The third question is on SACMEC, which I briefly alluded to earlier, which we discussed in our last committee meeting. Now, next fall, as you all know, is a fairly prominent education analyst, but he was also an advisor to SACMEC. And he has come out and said that the data that SACMEC has released, or that was released through the department, can't be compared year on year because it isn't benchmarked properly. And he said that he raised these concerns with SACMEC, and he's raised these concerns with the department, but they've fallen on deaf ears. To the extent that the department came along to our committee meeting and said that there's been a huge improvement in learner outcomes. But according to Nick Spall, this is not statistically valid because of the comparability problem with the data. And he says that the department knows this, it knows that it's not comparable, but it still went ahead and came to Parliament and told us that there's been this huge improvement in learner outcomes. Now, we all want to see an improvement in learner outcomes, of course. But we obviously need to be looking at data which tells us that gives us the right picture. And I think it's a very serious allegation that the department came to Parliament and misled us. And it was certainly shocking to me when I learned about it, because we all sat in that committee meeting and nobody likes to be misled. So if you could tell us, is it true that the data isn't comparable year on year, as Nick Spall alleges? And if not, if it's not comparable year on year, how can the department then come and say that there's been an improvement since the last SACMEC report? My next question relates to Kali Bude, the adult literacy program. Now, I think we were all very proud when the program won the UNESCO Confucius Prize for Literacy in September, just over a month ago. But now we look at this annual report and we find that 298,000 out of 430,000 learners, adult learners, did not complete the course, which is a huge, I think it's just over a third, if my calculations are correct, didn't in fact benefit from the program, and that's 132,000 shortfall. In addition, there's evidence of large-scale corruption in the program, which is why you've reported 44 million rands worth of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, up from 28,000 rand last year, which is a massive increase from 28,000 to 44 million, all because of this program. And what we are getting from the annual report is that there were volunteer teachers who were claiming for teaching learners when in fact no lessons took place, or in some cases they simply inflated the number of learners that they were teaching. And this is very, very serious, and I think that we need to interrogate this very, very seriously. In addition, there seems to be issues around the procurement for the auditing firm involved in the Kali Bude program. And I think it was 23 million rands worth of money involved that went to the auditing firm SAB&T. Now, it's not quite clear to me from the report exactly what the problem was with the procurement. But it is concerning because we know that this company was found by the High Court, I think it was in June, to have been involved in corruption in the Department of Social Development, in dodgy procurement in that department. So it is concerning that there is this company and that they have had a finger pointed at them for irregular expenditure in the department. So please can you outline for us exactly what happened with the paying of, let's call them ghost learners, learners who were actually not present in the classroom but were claimed by the volunteer teachers to be present in the classroom, thereby inflating their own stipend that they got. And what steps you're taking against the guilty officials and teachers who were involved in that. And please, can you just outline exactly what went wrong with the procurement process for SABMT, and what is being done to hold the guilty parties accountable for that? And also, just on the Kari Gude program, it would be instructive to know whether you knew about the potential corruption in the program, as well as the shortfall of 132,000 learners, when UNESCO was adjudicating the program. And if you did know of the corruption and the upcoming shortfall, did you declare this to UNESCO before they made their final adjudication on the price? My fifth question relates to teaching posts, and this is something of very deep concern. The DG said that we need resources, but the resources are decreasing, and that your hands are tied because of Treasury, and because there just simply isn't enough money for next year. Can you please elaborate for us, what will the shortage in teaching posts be next year exactly, and what steps are you taking to address the shortage, either through shifting funds around within the department or through any non-financial measures such as volunteer programs or any other non-financial measures that you can take to try and smooth the shortage or try to minimize the effects of this shortage for next year. Then we saw that 7% of teachers were, only 7% of principals in this financial year were appointed with an accompanying competency assessment, but your target was 75%. This is a massive failure, or massively missed target from 75% to 7%. Can you just tell us why you're missing the target in such a spectacular fashion? And I think linked to that is the other huge target that was missed, which is the self-diagnostic assessment for ESAL and maths. I mean, the ESAL, the English program, the shortfall was 487 teachers did a self-diagnostic assessment out of 20,000. So that's a shortfall of 19,500. And when it came to maths, the shortfall was 19,300. How exactly can you miss the target so spectacularly? It seems to me that there was no program in place at all to actually make sure that the target was reached, and that you just simply left it to chance to see whether it would be reached. I'm nearly there. I've got one more question. Just lastly, when the CFO was outlining the financial statements, she said that the Auditor General, and I must say we are quite displeased that this presentation is happening before the Auditor General, because it's customary and it's logical for the AG to present his findings to us so that we can then take them to the department. And I hope that we do get an opportunity to be able to hold the department to account once we've seen the AG. But nevertheless, at the moment, we've only got to go on what has been presented to us from the CFO. And the AG found that the accounting officer did not take the necessary steps to deal with 599 million rand in irregular expenditure, 153 million rand worth of unauthorized expenditure, and 44 million rand worth of fruitless and wasted expenditure, and that relates to the Karugide program that I discussed earlier. Now, what steps are being taken against the accounting officer for not taking the necessary steps to avoid this fruitless and wasteful, unauthorized and irregular expenditure? Because surely steps do need to be taken against the accounting officer if he failed in his duty in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Davis. Honorable Goto.
Thank you, Shabu. I think I must thank the Deputy Minister and the DG for giving us the insightful report, and would like to appreciate the fact that given the huge number of challenges the department continues to give us an unqualified audit opinion. I think it's very commendable to see that the department has also taken serious some of the issues that were raised by the AG. We are aware that some of the recurring issues that's particularly related to that were raised by the AG. They have been attended to well, and they have added flesh to the improvement of the audit routine. A particular example, Chairperson, relates to the findings on the financial statements. I think you have outdone yourself on that one. But Chairperson, I think my colleagues, they have raised an issue on the issue of the audit, the internal audit and the controls within the department that continue to hamper the progress, you know, the good progress that the department is making. They continue to tarnish the image of the department. To that effect, I want to ask the department what actions have they taken to strengthen the effectiveness of that unit. I'm saying that, Chairperson, that I think even for the provinces, we get a report that they lack capacity to implement some of the key programs, especially capital programs, and they have a weak audit unit. And as the portfolio committee chairperson, when the minister addressed us in the previous meetings that we held with her, she assured the committee that they are taking these matters serious, and we have been monitoring that. The strategic meeting that was held in Pretoria, the minister even went to the extent of showing us that they have appointed a team of specialist experts, like the quantity surveyors and engineers in the department to deal with specialized services that the department might not necessarily have to help with the issues of, you know, infrastructure delivery, which were an issue in the past audits. But it seems as if after that good track record, we sort of, you know, relaxing issues of leadership, issues of consequence management, or still prop up the issue of monitoring. You hear it when the DG reports saying that, or the CFO, when she reports that the IA will give them reports and they will rely on those reports. And it's an issue of monitoring, and it's an issue of leadership there. And it goes further to talk to the issues of the issue of LTSM. You know that you as a SDE, you can't be all over the provinces because there is a separation of powers. But I think with the audit unit that is stronger, will be strategically positioned to intervene and respond to the challenges. You know, get their own any warning signs. Maybe if they can give us an indication on that part, on how, what specific actions they have taken to strengthen that unit so that it's able to put us in good stead as a department. The second point, Chairperson, is that every time, like you look at the previous reports, they will tell you that irregular expenditure, costless expenditure, they will tell you about unauthorized. And we all know that in certain instances, it's money spent on services that we have consumed as a sector, but it might be a problem of lack of reporting, no money stolen in certain instances, or many instances. But we can't forever have that thing happening where we are talked to about irregular expenditure. Why are we not planning properly in advance? Why are we not estimating properly? You know,
so that we avoid this eventuality. And I think the other point, Chairperson, that comes into mind is the issue of the definition of infrastructure within our sector, because it's very clear that what we define as infrastructure as DBE is not what is infrastructure in other departments. Because if there is no library in a school, it's part of the infrastructure. So why can't we, as DBE, engage with Treasury and AG to come into agreement on how we define infrastructure, because furniture is part of the infrastructure, so that we are completely able to eradicate this recurring matter, because we know that some of the things are not things that happened now, there are things that have happened in the past. So I think that's the point that I wanted to talk to Chairperson in terms of that irregular expenditure. The issue of school sports, Chairperson, and other enrichment activities comes into the fold. Because in my view, and I think it's a view that is shared by all, that these programs, they contribute to social cohesion and they help in shaping the morals, the conduct and the discipline of individual learners. But when you look at the way things, the picture on the ground, you find that still we have racialized participation. The learners in public school, they seem to be participating on their own, the black learners. Learners in other schools, they seem to be participating somewhere, but there is a budget that is allocated by the department. And I think the money that we are spending, we must have good value for it as a department. And I think that the department must give us an indication on this matter. They must give us an answer as to what direction is the department taking or planning to take to ensure that we have good value for money on this item. Chairperson, I don't want to go further on that one, but I think I must end there. And then the second one, the third point relates to the issue of leave management, absenteeism in schools. Like, it's a recurring problem that we meet all the time. When we went to the Eastern Cape, we got that information that there's a lot of absenteeism. There is a lot of people that are teachers that are taking leave, but no action is taken against them. And this, we know that it impacts on the treaties that we have, and then it also impacts on curriculum delivery. I want to check from the department, how far are you assisting the district to properly monitor and manage leave and absenteeism, and how far have you gone with engagement with SATU in terms of the issues of performance agreement with the teaching staff and the principal. The other important point, Chairperson, relates to going back to the issue of infrastructure. Within the report, we received an indication that the infrastructure grant was cut and National Treasury did not agree to the rollover. And now we know that we are dealing with moving targets. We know about the situation of Bouani, when we have built schools and they have been torched. It means that it's a burden on top of another. I just want to check from the department, how far are we in terms of reaching our infrastructure targets? And
the issue of school rationalization also emerges in the report, and it's also one of the contributory factors to the understanding on ASIDI, particularly in the Eastern Cape. I want to check how far have the department engaged COGTA and the House of Traditional Affairs in terms of resolving this issue, because it's an issue around consultation, and whether it's possible for the department to, at least in the process where there is delay in terms of consultation, why doesn't the department shift the resources to other provinces so that we don't experience underspending on those matters? And then I also, lastly on that point, I want to check if at all there are new time frames. The department has adopted new time frames which will guide the finalization of this matter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable. Did you, can I hand over to you to respond to the issues and questions that the Honorable members have raised? I'll take the last group of Honorable members. Yes, it is.
You would go into the greater detail, but that's just to give you a response with regard to many of the issues that have been raised. And firstly, let me at the outset thank all the honorable members for raising very, very pertinent and important issues that confront us as a system. Mr. Son raised the issue of inclusive education, and thank you very much for noting the progress that has been made. And we certainly share with you the view that we should accelerate our programs or replicate what we see there in other schools. We were concerned about inclusive education. In fact, what the department had done is held a dedicated roundtable conference dealing particularly with an issue of intellectually disabled learners. This arises from a challenge that the West Cape Department of Education faced in the High Court, and it's something that we couldn't leave unattended, because it's not a Western Cape issue, it's a countrywide issue. And as a result, we had a very deep discussion, and all the participants who were affected were certainly impressed by it. But we've gone beyond that. And what the department said, and this is the view, strong view of the department, and it's correct in my respectful opinion, is that you can't look at dealing with issues of deficits at a later stage. It's got to happen right in the beginning. So the screening must take place, the mainstreaming must take place right in the beginning. And therefore, the psychosocial support schools have to be provided with shouldn't be made available in a generic sense. So you have to be able to identify the deficit at a very, very early stage, make the intervention appropriately, and that would enable a large number of learners who would have otherwise been outside the system to include in the system and to participate in an effective way. So that we're working very closely with the Department of Health in relation to the screening process as well, and we've in fact requested and almost directed all provinces and all districts to ensure that they provide psychosocial support. I must say Gauteng has basically taken up the challenge very well, so has the Western Cape in relation to this particular aspect, and I'm not suggesting that the other provinces are not doing so, but certainly they are front runners in terms of this particular exercise. The second issue that was raised by Mr. Son is an important issue, because it deals precisely with the kind of society that we want to build, social cohesion. Why is it, for example, and as we visit provinces and schools, we're confronted with this reality, to say, look, you now have English and Afrikaans being taught in say KwaZulu-Natal and in Maritzburg, and there is no, it's an extra burden to have a third additional language. And then you would engage with the educators, the principals, the governing body association, to say, in your social environment, do your learners speak Afrikaans, for example, in Pietermaritzburg or Durban, the Indian community? They say, no, it's just a requirement. The learner population in the school, what is it like? Well, 80% is Zulu, and 20% is Isizulu. Why should you teach English and Isizulu under those circumstances? Wouldn't it be a more practical and pragmatic way to deal with it? In the Western Cape, obviously, it would be quite different because it's a large number of Afrikaans-speaking people, learners over here. So it's a question of basically looking at the relevant needs in a particular way. But what we've done as a department is say that communicative competence contributes very, very positively and meaningfully to social cohesion. And indeed, an indigenous African language must be taught where it is not taught. So for example, if you have Afrikaans and Isikosa in the Western Cape, no problem at all. You don't have to teach another language over there. You're dealing with the language of learning and teaching and an indigenous African language. So schools would have to adapt to it, and as we have the conversation with them, they begin to understand, oh, so you mean we can teach English and isiZulu, and we don't have to teach Afrikaans, for example, in the context of Peter Maritzburg schools that we visit. They say, yeah, it's not a problem at all. So if you look at the number of schools that are affected, it's about 4,800 schools countrywide. It's not all schools over here. The pilots have indicated very, very clearly that they are able to manage the process. But what the department did is they said, we can't basically say schools do it at one go. We say do it incrementally. Start off with grade one. The year thereafter is grade one and grade two. The year after is grade one, grade two, grade three. As we are able to develop capacity over time, we are able to ensure that the facilitating of learning and teaching takes place effectively. In addition, we basically prepared the resources that are necessary for the introduction of these languages as a second additional language. We basically utilize television, and we are utilizing technology optimally for this to take place. But the principle is that it would be a sad day if we basically ignore. It's a constitutional imperative that there should be parity of esteem of our 11 official languages, and indeed we have to ensure that that takes place. You can't have our situation as occurred in the past. With regard to the issue, and thank you, Ms. Basson, for raising this issue. The position with regard to early childhood development is an important issue, but in our current context, from 0 to 5 years is the responsibility. 0 to 4, completing 4 years, is of social development. 5 onwards, in other words, your grade R onwards, is the responsibility of the Department of Basic Education. There is an anomaly, because when you enroll in schools, you enroll a child who is 5 years old but could turn 6 before June is accepted. Now, if you play that back, then you find the difficulty that occurred in your grade RR and your grade R. The Department of Basic Education and the Department of Social Development are meeting to deal with this particular anomaly, to say, how do we deal with it? Some of you may recall that there was an attempt at one stage to basically provide policy. That was challenged, and it was challenged on the basis that there was no law or regulation in place which would oblige schools to accept only learners who are 6 years old, and not 5 turning 6. And therefore, the court could not basically take away the discretion of governing bodies in terms of the admission policy, particularly where they have evidence that the learner has the cognitive ability to be in that particular class. So this conversation is fairly advanced, which would culminate in some kind of policy and regulation that would determine how we manage this particular transition from preschool to post-school. So thank you for raising this particular anomaly, but we would be more than happy to engage with the affected person quite directly. Now, you raise also the issue of rural education. Very, very interesting. Again, because of its importance, the Department of Basic Education had a dedicated conference, a roundtable conference, dealing specifically with rural education, and it has gone beyond that. It has established a unit within the department entrusted with the responsibility of rural education. It's not a very huge unit, but it's a unit that coordinates and manages this. Amongst the issues that we confront with are the realities that what do we do to ensure that we are able to retain skilled personnel in our rural areas? And you know, you have in certain instances the issues of how to teach schools, and in other instances, if you go to Libode in the Eastern Cape, for example, you have the phenomenon of how to reach schools. Just to travel from the town to that particular school, and it might have the best, you've got about 34 state-of-the-art schools, they're primary schools, but go to those schools by road. It's an impossible task over there. Now, should an educator then be compelled to travel between those two places, or should we provide facilities? So one of the ways of dealing with it, and this is what we're selling the RTD program, is that if you're going to be spending 30 million rand on a school, surely there should be some quarters provided for educators who stay there between Monday to Friday, and during the weekend would go home. In that way there, they would be in school on time, they don't have to wait for the bus, and it certainly makes teaching and facilitating more positive. But we've requested the head of department, the DG, to speak to the heads of department through HEDCO on basically a uniform method of incentivization. In other words, you can't have an incentive in KwaZulu-Natal that doesn't apply in Limpopo and apply it elsewhere. We have a similar challenge with regard to your minimum stipend for practitioners in early childhood development. You have KwaZulu-Natal paying 2,500 rand, another province paying 4,500, another province paying 2,000, and then we said, no, there's got to be a minimum stipend of 5,000 rand, and indeed our intention is to professionalize that particular category, and that's why we are raising the level of practitioners in early childhood development to level 6, so that they could have the full benefits of an educator there. Now, this process is quite advanced, and incentives would have to be basically dealt with. Now, rural education is I think Mr. Kosa is basically, or somebody has raised, it's a complex issue, because you have your urban, your peri-urban, you have sparsely populated areas, you have deep rural areas. When you draw the line, and therefore it takes a lot of application to say, in order to develop a norm for rural education in terms of incentives and benefits, what is it that we're going to look at and what are the factors that should be taken into account? So they're busy with criteria, and we do hope that that would contribute very meaningfully and directly to that. Now, the issue of the curricular practitioners, yes, indeed, thank you very much for raising that. You know, we should celebrate the fact that Katune has basically provided employment in a sense, it's not permanent employment, but incentives to more than 40,000, particularly young women, and some of whom are graduates. We have been encouraging those practitioners to study further. In fact, we said that we would even basically invite them to apply to our teacher program. The Funza Lushaka, our bursary program, the Funza Lushaka program, so that they could basically, while they are practitioners, also acquire the appropriate skills. We are expanding on our grade R. We want to make it universal. We would require practitioners, and those educators or those practitioners who have already had the skills of teaching, particularly at that level, would be a wonderful and important resource for us to do so. So that engagement has already occurred, and many, many practitioners have in fact taken up that particular challenge. You raised then, Ms. Basson, an important issue about SAM, SEMT, and LURIT. And I would like to link it with what was raised very appropriately by Ms. Makoto with regard to absenteeism. You know, we've done phenomenally well, or reasonably well, let's put it this way, 90.2% of data, capturing data, this is quite critical. Which means that we would be able to say who the learner is, who the learner's parents are. We would be able to basically feed into the system the performance of the learner in terms of annual national assessment, progress, health problems, whatever else. But our view is that we have to make sure that it's web-based. Because when it is web-based, we would be able to include, amongst other things, the curriculum published, the attendance of educators in schools, and we would have this information live. That would be linked to availability of ICT in all our schools. Now, we've done reasonably well in terms of providing administrative connectivity to our schools. You know, the Eastern Cape, some 4 years ago, were at less than 27%. They are at more than 95% right now in terms of administrative connectivity. Once we have that right, the application can be installed, and I'm telling you, we would be flying because all the data that we have with regard to LURIT, to be able to track our learners, is available. Not only is it available, it has been verified with the Department of Home Affairs, and that's quite remarkable. So in other words, we don't just collect data, we make sure that it is verified, and indeed that those identity numbers or the birth dates are indeed corresponding with Home Affairs. In fact, there's a three-pronged approach. The one is you use the identity number. In the absence of the identity number, you are able to use the date of birth, and in the absence of the date of birth, you would be able to utilize other particulars. In other words, in the birth certificate, you would be able to use the other particulars, that of the parents and so forth. So that process has gone very, very well with Home Affairs, and indeed I do think that Lourdes would become a precious resource for us to be able to utilize. Mr. Khoza, you spoken about the inclusive education. I cannot but agree with you, and I'm so glad that there's at least, you know, I know the DA is an activist, and the ANC is activist in terms of inclusive education. We need that, because we have to be minded constantly about the fact that as you look at the needs of your learners, please do not forget about those who have disabilities. And that's a constant reminder, and I think it's something that we have raised consistently. In fact, the year before last, we dedicated the year to the year of inclusive education, given its importance. Is there an engagement between higher education and basic education? Indeed, there is. There has to be, because we regard education as a continuum. It starts off with preschooling, goes through your schooling and post-schooling, whether it's at university of technology, at colleges or elsewhere, and then lifelong learning. So education has to be regarded as a continuum, and there has to be a continued discussion between ourselves. Where do we discuss and how do we discuss? We discuss with each other in terms of the curriculum content that is prepared that is prepared by universities for our educators, so that the facilitating of learning and teaching basically speaks to the needs. So there were concerns raised by honorable members and by certain sectors who say, is there sufficient practical content in your curriculum at universities? How are you going to address it? How do you deal with issues of diversity? How do you deal with the issues of inclusive education, particularly when mainstreaming is a big deal? So we have to remind constantly the universities, institutions of higher learning, these are the issues. What about diversity of language? What about diversity of culture in terms of life orientation? How do you manage those conversations? So that is one level. The second level is basically with higher education training, you've got your TVETs. They're doing quite extraordinary work, because in 5 years, the numbers have increased by more than 350,000. But we're creating an opportunity now. We've introduced this year the vocational stream in grade 10, which will continue into grade 10 and 11 the next year, because we don't believe you do things at one bang if you're not ready for it. But next year, we are also introducing the occupational stream. Now, whilst we're doing that, we can't be doing that and you have your TVETs out, then you're doing either the same thing, or what kind of synergy and what kind of conversation is to take place? And we've got a dedicated team with the Department of Basic Education, sits with higher education and training to ensure that your technical elements in terms of technical schools speak to each other in a way that we provide a clear conduit for our learners, so that conversation is indeed taking place. It also means that we have to constantly be in contact with universities to say, what are the kind of cognitive demands that you require? Please evaluate the content of our curriculum. What are the elements you would feel as you basically teach our children at universities we should do better in? And in fact, that conversation has helped, because at one stage, universities used to pull their arms to say, we're not responding adequately. We said, no, if you want us to respond adequately, tell us which are the areas we've got to improve. And what is it you've got to do when you discover these deficits at university? So that conversation has helped. With regard to the appointment of principals, you know, we must agree with you that, you know, your professional leaders and managers of schools are your principals, and your functionality of schools are closely linked with the ability of your principals. What is the cause of the delay? One is that what we have now is an MQ, which is Integrated Quality Management System, am I right? IQMS, which is going to be replaced by the QMS, and that has not been finalized. The QMS speaks to the competency, not only of principals, but also deputy principals and educators. And while there is a principal agreement, it is in the LRC to be finalized. So that's one dimension. The second dimension is we have legislation, and very interesting, this legislation that is in draft and has been submitted to the Council of Education Ministers meeting and is going to be submitted at the next meeting for approval so that we could promulgate it and then submit to Cabinet. Deals with a range of issues, amongst which would be the qualification of principals. Principals require professional qualifications, in other words, they must have the appropriate degree. They require experience so that you don't have a principal, a teacher who's been there for 2 years and then becomes the principal of the school because he or she might not have the appropriate experience that is required and must have the competency in terms of leadership and management. Among the competencies a principal would should have would be to have financial skills because he or she would be assisting that particular process, communication skills, skills in terms of democracy, skills in terms of management, skills in terms of interaction with senior managers and communities. So it's a range of skills, complex skills that principals require. And indeed, what is happening, what we can say, you know, after a long battle, we've got the South African Council of Educators to prepare curriculum content for principals and deputy principals. And if my estimation is right, I think 25,000 principals and deputy principals have already subscribed to that particular course to enhance and improve their capacity. So you've got the legislation on the one side, you have the QNF on the other side, and the ELRC. But in my view, it's going to become a reality sooner rather than later. At this point in time, we can tell you that the two provinces that are really implementing competency efficiently is the Western Cape and Gauteng. And we do hope it would expand sooner rather than later to the other provinces. The next point that you raise about ENA, the DG has indicated that at the last Council of Education Ministers meeting, the three proposals have been submitted, all the MECs have accepted it, the heads of departments are quite happy with it. As for us now to basically ensure that we've already consulted with the unions, but to consult with them again, because we don't want to have a situation out here where the department is going in one way, the unions are going the other way, and we talk about all unions. It's not about SATU only, it's about all teacher unions, and we're going to also engage with the governing body associations and the principals associations so that all the relevant stakeholders are going to be there. I would certainly urge that we have, as a portfolio committee, both the portfolio committee and the select committee has an opportunity to engage with the proposal in greater depth, and we might be enriched through your intervention at a later stage. Mr. Msimang, thank you very, very much for your input. And it's always nice hearing you because you speak almost from a practitioner. You must have been an educator, clearly. Sport is an interesting phenomenon. You know, the debate about sport and where it should be located is as old as our democracy, if not older. I remember the time where you had Minister Steve Tshwete, the late Steve Tshwete, and the late Khadar Asmal contesting and debating as to who should have authority over the schools. That debate has not really been finalized. As we speak right now, the position is as follows. The Department of Basic Education is responsible for school sport, is responsible for regional and provincial discipline. Provincial sport, national sport becomes the responsibility of the Department of Sport and Recreation. With regard to the money for resources, you know, the Department of Sport and Recreation, and I empathize with that, has a very small budget. And they rely primarily and principally on sponsorship. The infrastructure grants, the municipal infrastructure grant, provides municipalities with a grant for sporting amenities. And there has been an appeal by the Department of Sport and Recreation to say, from there, surely you should give us a slice for us as Sport and Recreation in collaboration with Department of Education to be able to provide for sporting amenities within our school. So that's one reality. But let me give you some other reality. You see, this exercise of this legislation, it might not be very popular in some quarters, but it's important. It's about transformation. You have historically the result of the apartheid past. Schools that have all the resources, they haven't paid for it. Government gave it to them simply because they were white. Now we say let's twin and let's utilize resources. There's a huge reluctance to share those resources, even if we say coordinated and well, managed well. What we've done in the draft legislation to say that you are obliged to share your resources provided that there are certain criteria. In other words, it doesn't clash. It's well coordinated, managed in this cooperation and collaboration. So it basically, you're not going to have a governing body to say school X and school Y are 2 kilometers apart from each other. Take your Centon and take your Alex Township. And school X, which has no resources for no fault because there's no land available, forget anything else, for those resources, is obliged to use the facility of the other school. The other school can't now say, listen, it's our school, it's our facilities, go and fight back. because that's basically they would have found reasons to deny access. So one of the things that the bill is dealing with is this particular reality, but it's not doing so imposing it. It's to say, create a mechanism where this can happen so that there is no clash and it's well facilitated. And I thought that would indeed help you in terms of seeing how we're trying to deal with this particular matter, both in terms of legislation, but also in terms of policy and through inter-ministerial coordination in this regard. Now, you've raised quite correctly the issue, Ms. Musimang, about provinces. You know, again, it's sad when we hear some parts and we don't hear all parts. And I'm not referring to your concern is a legitimate one. Take the province of Limpopo. Overall, it's a poorly performing province. But take your two schools, Mbilwe and Denbrot. Those two schools perform better than any other school in the province. They produce not less than 50 distinctions in mathematics and science. Every child in Mbilwe does mathematics and science, not mathematical literacy. They consistently provide 100% pass. And if you look at the school, it's rural. If you look at the teachers, it's African. If you can look at the learners, they are African. And they are the best performing school in Limpopo with your model, former model of the schools included. Denbrot is much the same. So there are excellence in rural systems, which basically to say, if you provide, but they have laboratories, they have ICT, and they have dedicated teachers. So if those ingredients are present, your facilitation of learning, learning environment, and you have the support of the community because the condition, the principal has indicated to us, you know, they would not deny access to any rural child. No test to be written, but there's a condition. You're going to make sure that you're there for extra classes. You're going to make sure that you can do mathematics and science. You're going to make sure that you're available on Saturday when extra classes are called for, and we complete our curriculum by June. So if you're in matric, your curriculum is completed in June, the revision takes place after. Our actuaries, our black actuaries, are coming from that particular province. So the story is simply this. There's another phenomenon. You know, we talk about Gauteng in the Western Cape all the time. What happened last was Gauteng. The year before that, it was Free State, and then Northwest, and then Gauteng, and Western Cape was number 5 in terms of performance. But somehow our memories are so short, we only look at last year and say it's only these two provinces because they were marginal. But Free State and the Northwest have established that they have the capacity as a rural province to achieve the same level of excellence. And I do believe that with appropriate hard work, you do so. So if you go to KZN, for example, there are districts that perform as good as, if not better, than any other district in the country. You will have 100% passes in almost all the schools within the district. But you go deeper, you find you have this problem about resources, you have a problem about teachers, and, you know, it means something has to be done, and interventions are indeed taking place, and I will speak to that in terms of the interventions. What I could tell you, for example, that the National Department, the Minister has been to KwaZulu-Natal, she's been to Limpopo, she's been to the Eastern Cape, so has the Deputy Minister. I haven't been to Limpopo, I've been to KwaZulu-Natal, and the Eastern Cape. Our department has been providing support. We have a collaboration agreement with the National Education Collaboration Trust, where we've identified 8 districts for interventions to take place. The provinces provide us, now listen to this, the provinces provide us on each term their outcome, the results, not only for grade 12, grade 9, grade 10, grade 11, grade 12, so that we could monitor that whether these underperforming province districts are able to turn around, and if they are not able to do so, what kind of intervention. We've got no budget for it, no extra budget. We're simply doing it because we can. And it doesn't matter where it is, whether it's in Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, or anywhere else. And I thought that is some good news, and therefore you've got to have a rural strategy to say, what do you do differently in that particular environment to assist? Yes, Zimbabwe has done well, and one of the key lessons that we learned from Zimbabwe, and in fact we've reinforced it and we've seen the results, is that without the fundamentals of literacy and numeracy, if you cannot read with understanding, if you cannot write well, you're going to have difficulties as you go ahead. So go to your tertiary institutions, whether it's the University of Cape Town, University of Witwatersrand. You will discover that you find our black children in particular, African children in particular,
are equally, adequately, cognitively on par. Where do they fall short? It's in terms of their language skills. Because it's not their mother tongue. It's not their mother tongue. So they have to write an examination in a language that is not their mother tongue, and that's a huge constraint. And therefore, we've an integrated first additional language right from grade one into the system, so that those children, when the switch takes place, don't have a disadvantage. So we, but it's a systemic change which we will see over time, and I thought it's important, but certainly benchmarking is and there are very good things to talk about. Mr. Davis, thank you very much for raising a very important issue about Feeds Must Fall. It's not only about our teachers. It's about our health professionals. It's about our engineers. It's about our lawyers. Because if you have a loss of a year, academic year, it's not only a loss for the Department of Basic Education, it's a loss for the country's entire economy. And we have to take this seriously. In terms of our conversation, and to show you that there is always a conversation between higher education and ourselves, the problem with regard to humanities is less complex. In other words, they can't afford to even delay a little bit. But when it comes to your health professions and your engineering, you know, your built-up environment specialists, it becomes much more difficult. And to an extent, your financial thing. But humanities and finances, less complex, but your health professionals and your built environment professions become a huge problem out there. And therefore, we cannot afford. Our view as the Department of Basic Education is that, please, we cannot afford a loss of an academic year. What is it we're doing? Firstly, we are trying to persuade and assist and engage, even if we have to engage with university students, even though it is not within our domain. We will do so because it is in the public interest and the interest of our country to be able to do so. And you know, we take pride in it. And I spoke about our leadership over here. You know, when we saw COSAS marching to the JSE, no stone that was flung, no schools were disrupted, did so in a responsible and mature way. So to say, is it possible to have a cohort of leaders who are not even at university to behave in a disciplined way, who understand basically what their future and destiny is about. And one of the explanations that they would give you, and you can speak to them, is to say that if at all we're going to start boycotts, the victims are going to be the African children, rather than those who are in African schools. So there is that understanding about that. So what do we do in terms of education itself? You know, we have this 13,800 and something Funza Rishabda graduates. The province, for example, that is doing the worst in terms of deployment is the Western Cape. Now, it does many good things, let me just say, so I'm not targeting. It means that from the Western Cape, those that have qualified will have a large number of educators who would be available to assist other provinces because they are not bound. Their contract in terms of receiving this sponsorship is not bound, linked to a province. They would choose a province if that's not available, the next province, or they could be deployed anywhere countrywide. So one resource that we have available would be the resource of many of the educators, many of those recipients of grants from the Western Cape who could be used elsewhere. Not only the Western Cape, there are other provinces as well, but I'm saying if you look at the worst performing in terms of deployment, it certainly would be the Western Cape consistently for the past 3 years. I don't know why, but it's quite unusual, but it's true. You can check it up with your MEC for Education and she will tell you. I've raised it there as well. So that would be one way of dealing with the matter. Now, you speak about this gentleman, and I have a high regard for him. He's quite an interesting specialist, Nick Spall. I can only share with you and give you an insight of an experience that I've had directly. I was invited with him to a show, a talk show. It was broadcast, it was some Friday night on education itself and government programs. Huge, attracted a lot because it was really contentious. And there was a wonderful program director out there who was really robust. And we had just gone through the second year of our ENA. And he told me, Deputy Minister, I'm going to tell the public that the ENA improvement, it was the second year, is too high. It's not possible, it's not legitimate. I'm going to tell them that we cannot rely on this data. So I said, Nick, have you looked at this year's paper and compared it with last year's paper? He said, no. Did you do
any analysis person in the audience says no. So I said, are you, Niels Bohr, going to tell me that you are going to tell the nation that this is not a credible exercise without having done so? He kept quiet. He surely didn't read it. Because if he had done so, I would have told the South African public, here is a man who says he's an academic and analyst, who has not even looked at the two papers, the previous year and this year, and is making a statement that it is not credible. How does he do so? On the basis of hearsay. Now, look, if you're going to use that and then say this department is misleading you, then please ask Niels Bohr why he would have wanted to mislead the nation without even doing the basics of an honest research in terms of that. So I don't want to throw names over you. I have no problem with him. No problem at all. But I'm relating to you an experience which you can convey to him and tell him this is what Deputy Minister says on this particular day, in this evening, and I have more than 10 witnesses who can confirm that. Because I was angry when he told me that he did not even look at the two papers and he was going to tell the nation that it is not credible. That is your analyst? That is the person that you're going to say you're going to rely on to challenge this. What did the department do when he raised MET? The department sent it back to the people who are responsible for SECMET, because we are not SECMET, to say this is a concern that has been raised. Please check and double check, because it seems as if the difference, and this is what the DG said without you raising it, to say the concern was about, because he didn't have to say Niels Bohr said so or anybody else. He said this is a concern, this was raised, and we are doing so. We didn't sit back and say, well, look, because we've done better, we're not going to send it back. We questioned the same thing. So there is an honesty and integrity about what we do. So when you throw this, Honorable Davis, do so with careful consideration of the consequences of what you say. Because what we're saying out here is this may be a question that you're using in a manipulative way. So I will ask you, as a counter, why is it that you did not pronounce on the improvement of our system? You pronounce on the deficiencies publicly of the educators in terms of their knowledge, content knowledge in grade 6. That you regarded as legitimate. You accepted that. But you did not regard the improvement of our limits. No. There was an article from you, and indeed it is in the newspaper. Okay, you'll have an opportunity to raise it, but we could talk about it. We then go on to you know, what makes me angry, Mr. Davis, is you said that the department misled. The department did not mislead. The department merely provided you with the preliminary findings of an institution that is independent of the department. It did not mislead you to say, this is our finding. It is saying to you, this is what SECMET 4 is saying to us. It was this issue was raised, the department took, as an honest broker, took this information, sent it to the organizers, the people who are responsible, say, please examine, re-examine, because we do not want to a system. We do not want an outcome that is not credible. Now, what more do you expect the department to do? Do you then come to this house and say that this department, the chair, has misled you? And I think it's because it's important that we basically speak.
Yes, and as much, but I know sometimes when you are together as people, emotions will, you know, will come up, but
thank you very, very much. With regard to the Karikuri issue, I think the department's position.
Sir, can I just come in here, because my question hasn't been answered. You know, the minister seems to be getting very emotional, but he's not actually answering the question. The question
can I avoid the dialogue, Mr.
Honorable Davis? Is the data comparable across the years or not? It's a simple question. Is the data comparable or not?
Honorable Davis, can you listen to me? In no way where I will allow a dialogue between you and the DM. Can we allow the department to respond to the question? We know the procedure. If ever you are not satisfied with the way the question, there will be a follow-up if ever you insist that you need that. But let us give them space and time to respond to all the questions that have been raised.
Thank you very much. With regard to the Karikuri, in terms of the monies that were irregularly spent, I mean, something that we take as seriously as you do. You cannot have anybody misrepresenting what they've done. I think they must be prosecuted. The money must be collected. There's no question about taking that matter lightly, because it's an abuse of public funds. It's an abuse of public trust. And indeed, the department has taken the necessary steps. And I would certainly believe that the DG would have a responsibility of pursuing it and following it up in the CFO in the way possible. When it comes to unauthorized expenditure, it's a somewhat different situation. And I always say there's a context to everything. If you take the Eastern Cape, for example, and if you take the Eastern Cape in terms of its replacement of mud schools, the Eastern Cape, as we're speaking right here, right now, has more than 1,000 schools with a learner enrollment of less than 135. The question is, are those schools viable? Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng are all going through the process of rationalization. And what then happened is basically to say, look, this year is creating a delay because there is a merger that has to take place and there's a process. And again, we learn from the experience. When the Western Cape merged schools, they were taken to court, they succeeded in some, they didn't succeed in others, and they didn't succeed in others not because the decision was wrong, but the process wasn't correctly followed. What we've done as a department to say, learning from that experience, these are the steps that you've got to take. So whether you invest in Cape, Limpopo, or anywhere else, these are the appropriate steps that you've got to take when a merger takes place. There should be consultation, traditional leaders, stakeholders, governing bodies, teacher unions, learners, the parents, everything. So we put it out in steps so that those norms could be followed, so that the rationalization takes place. Now, we have these challenges in the Eastern. Among the challenges are, you have a school that is not identified as an Asidi school. But children, 50% of the children don't have a chair to sit on. What do you do? We've provided the Eastern Cape alone with more than 87,000 units of furniture from the visitors. We've provided Limpopo with units. We've provided the Northwest with units because these are immediate needs. Now, we can't argue with the Auditor General and when they say, look, it's unauthorized, because indeed it is unauthorized. The money was allocated for a particular purpose. We have to provide the explanation. We've got to get permission for the deviation, and that is indeed what we're going to do with Treasury, and that's what the DG says he has to do. So I certainly would distinguish between those two elements. I don't know about the SAB and T, because I think the DG would basically have great detail. As ministers, we don't get involved in contracts. The shortages in teaching posts, you know, there's always going to be a shortage in teaching posts, Mr. Davis, for this reason. Not very long ago, maths was not a fundamental. Mathematics or mathematical literacy was not a fundamental. Learners could pass matric without doing either mathematics or mathematical literacy. We wanted all our learners to become numerate, and we took a decision that indeed this must be so. Now, if you look at it, it's a fundamental in every single school. Do we have sufficient mathematics teachers? What about science teachers? And you know, at some stage in the past, and because of the legacy of apartheid, children were not encouraged to do mathematics and science. We've got to change the culture and the ethos of learning within those schools to say, listen, it might have not been good for you at that time because there were no opportunities. It now opens a new world to you, and mathematics and science should be. So obviously the demand would mean that there are far greater numbers. So when you have 700,000 learners who are sitting for the matric examination, at least 40% of them are writing mathematics. And at least 60% of them are writing mathematical literacy. Do we have enough teachers for all those learners? In matric alone, what about grade 11, what about grade 10, what about grade 9? Because it's a fundamental. So these are practical realities where we're looking at teacher shortages, not from a narrow lens, but from a bigger lens, and I think it's something that we have to look at. I thought I'd spoken about, Mr. Davis, I'm sure the competency assessment, I raised it with Ms. Kosas there, so I'll leave it at that. Now, the importance about self-diagnostic assessment that you raised, and quite importantly, I think, Ms. Davis, you know, we've had the benefit of attending conferences worldwide. Teacher unions in the United States of America, in other parts of Europe, Britain included, refuse to be assessed. Refuse, point blank, the teacher unions. And the global trend is to basically allow for self-regulated assessment that is non-intrusive to empower educators to be able to assess their ability and to be able to do so. Well, it's a different thing if you're going to apply for a position as a principal or deputy principal. And that becomes very critical and necessary. So what had to happen is when we had these 94 diagnostic instruments developed, they had to be tested. And the pilots basically took place, I think, in the University of KwaZulu-Natal, where we basically under privacy, and each one of those educators was willing to go through the assessment exercise because they understood. When we were satisfied that in terms of its demand, in terms of its efficiency, that it's okay, we decided then, let us take these devices and make it available to all our teacher resource centers so all educators could use it in a non-intrusive way. I'm convinced that once we have the instrument to monitor how often it is being used, because one of the tasks that we have to do is to tell the administrators, listen, please get every educator who comes here to do the assessment. We don't want the result. We don't want to know how well or how poorly he or she has done, but to give us your comments in terms of what we could do better in terms of that instrument. So if we had to refine it, we could indeed refine it. So thank you for raising that. I come now to Ms. Mokoto, and I know I'm speaking for a very long time, but please forgive me for that. Ms. Mokoto, I think irregular expenditure, I've spoken about school sport. You know, you raise the issue of school sport, and you raise it specifically in a particular context, and I think it's something that our nation must grapple with. What are the realities? Let's be honest about it. You go to the school, it's a former Model T school. The demographics have changed significantly. 80% of the learners are suddenly black. Black is an African Indian of color. 20% is white, was previously 100% white. So the demographics have changed. The teaching staff is completely white. Nothing has changed. The language policy has not changed. It's still English and Afrikaans. You might have 80-60% of the learners speaking IsiXhosa. And there's a reluctance to even absorb or assimilate that language. The sport codes that they participate in are not in the mainstream. They have their own separate needs. Then you ask now, what's going on here? Are we in the same South Africa? Take your aesthetics. More than 850,000 learners across the country participate. Educators whom we complain about to say they're not willing to do anything, give voluntary training to those learners in the choir. They don't charge 1 cent. And many of them belong to the organization that we condemn and rush from time to time. And if you see the performance of these learners, you would be so proud at the achievement. You would be willing to pay for it. But show me a white face. It's hardly there. Why are they not there? Because it's not only songs in indigenous African languages. There are songs in Afrikaans. There are songs in English. Many of the songs are in English. But why is there no participation? You'd be lucky if you have colored and Indians there too. A few colors from the Western Cape, hardly any white, if any. And this is it. That's the reality that we're going to face. Are we going to be polarizing ourselves over time, or are we going to integrate to say we have one nation which we could use over there? So the question then is, what does the Western Cape Department of Education say in terms of participating? What does the Gauteng Department of Education say in terms of encouraging and promoting participation if we want to have a cohesive society? So I'm glad you raised that. What applies there also applies equally to your football and to your cricket. But in terms of our performance in cricket, I think we're doing quite well. We're producing the Bavumas and the Bajisos and the Rabaras, whom we can be very, very proud of. I can't say the same about rugby. I can't say the same about soccer, unfortunately. But that's it. The issues then about the rationalization, I think I've spoken about that. I think I have dealt with, can we indeed, we have relocated resources where provinces have not spent on infrastructure to other provinces. We do so in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, which authorizes the minister to do so. So I thank you for listening to me, and may I, Chairperson, as I conclude, tell Mr. Davis, please forgive me for losing my cool a little bit. It's not personal, it's issue related, so you can have my assurance that our relationship will continue to be a cordial and a happy one in the future. Thank you very much. My apologies is extended to you.
Thank you very much, DM, for the responses. But honorable members, what is nice, maybe before I even say anything, can I welcome OMEC from the Eastern Cape, Honorable Makopole. Thank you very much for joining us. He's just here because he has got interest in education, but he's here for the NCOP debate that will be taking place.
but he felt that when we are together here, let him come so that he can be part of the engagements that we're having. Thank you so much for that. I was still saying, honorable members, one thing that we always say with our committee, we are open to engagement, and I think with the discussions that have just emerged, for me it says, specifically to you, Honorable Davis, the points that have been raised today, honorable members, it says we've listened to the preliminary report from the department on the submit report that we are just having. And I think it is opening up even more discussions when we get the department to come back and give us the final report, as we have got the report, as to say it's still preliminary, we're still going to get the final report, but I think we are heating up and warming up for the engagements to come, because there's so much that is coming to one's mind when such issues of such a report are being raised, because one can ask us to say, what do we say when the results are not good? Why do you know? There's so many things that I think we are all looking forward to that day where we are saying we'll be doing and dealing away with the report, the final report. And I can assure you, honourable members, even the interest that the media has taken with the preliminary report, I think it was just amazing, because everyone wanted to hear. They even say we hear remarks here and there, but let us wait for the final report where we cannot talk on the things that we are saying is still being finalized, and it will be very soon. Though I'm not sure, Honorable DM, as to say when is the final report to be issued on this, because no matter what, that is the report that we need to schedule. We need to engage as a committee. There are so many questions that were left hanging even on the day of that plenary report. But otherwise, honorable members, thank you very much for these questions. We're still going to continue. I know the sugar levels are getting a little bit low. DG, you still need to respond even in some, but ODM has covered quite a lot. Can I just... No, we can't give up lunch. We need to higher our levels, sugar levels, so that even when we come back after that, we'll be vibrant as we were now. Honourable members, can we just break for lunch? Lunch is already the very light lunch. 30 minutes will do, why not me? Please, can we just take 30 minutes, just stretch, pick up a little bit of lunch then? It's 5 minutes past one, please let us be here. 25 to 2. Thank you.